So here we go. We're going to start recruiting and broadcasting.
Thank you.
And we are ready to go. Chair, the floor is yours.
Okay.
Thank you. So this is calling to order for the meeting February 18th, Thursday, of the CCSD board. And Osana, if you could provide us with the flag, we'll do the pledge.
Yes.
Thank you. If you'll join me, please, in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag, of the United States of America and to the Republic, for which it stands.
One nation,
under God,
indivisible,
with liberty and justice for all. Thank you, Osana. We have a quorum established for the meeting, so we'll move to the report from closed session, please. Mr. Carmel.
Thank you, Madam President. At our last meeting, the board discussed in closed session the general manager's performance and the possible sale of some of the district's real property, but there's no reportable action.
Thank you. So we'll move on to the president's report, and if you'll indulge me, please, I have a report I'd like to give today, and part of that, of course, is the fact of the storm that we had. So I wanted to highlight the efforts of the district staff, some of whom were responding around the clock to ensure the operation and the safety of our essential services. That often happened in driving wind and rains, as everyone is aware. I'd like to acknowledge the leadership of the general manager in the interaction and pre-planning that he facilitated with staff. Board members had the opportunity to see the considerations and the backup planning that departments outlined, and it was very impressive. There was no way to anticipate just how significant the storm event turned out to be, but prior review and considerations of the staff certainly made a difference for the community. Staff also provided backup to each other, working beyond their defined jobs. Our district's essential services were maintained without interruption. Some of our neighbors experienced more significant impacts than others. The impact and range of effects to homes and property were significant for many, and it is difficult to see those who have been severely impacted. Our community as a whole rose to the need, with neighbors providing support and assistance to each other whenever a need was found. This is a bonded community and one of which we should all be proud. Thinking in terms of the community as a whole, I have a view I'd like to share. Our recent strategic planning provided an opportunity to recognize the significance and magnitude of the work ahead of the district. We have a full schedule of requirements, commitments, and infrastructure needs during this calendar year and beyond. In other words, a lot of big things. But we can't do big things within our community if we disparage or disrespect one another. We need to work towards resilience by being forward-looking and flexible. That's how you adjust to change and to opportunity. That's how we will conserve our surroundings while preserving the viability, health, and well-being of all the residents and their families. We've been cocooned for a year now, and our businesses have had to face severe challenges of reduced revenues while being forced to spend money in adapting how business can be done. When you can, please support them through to-go ordering, pickup and delivery, and when weather permits, outside dining. Our COVID shot doses are beginning to increase in availability, and the tier for 65 and above has opened. Make your reservations, get vaccinated, and please use your masks to protect yourself and others. Thank you.
Thank you.
Move on to 1F, which is the agenda review, additions and deletions. Does anyone have any additions or deletions as far as the agenda is concerned? Yes, Director Dean?
I'm not sure whether to say this now or when you get to the consent agenda, but Director Howell and I, as the ad hoc committee on the standing committee bylaws, found one spot in the standing committee bylaws we need to make just a slight wording change. So
okay. We can address that when we get to the consent agenda. That'll be fine.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, do I hear any other items for the agenda that anyone wants to address? No. All right, we'll move on to public safety then. And the Sheriff's Department report. I believe, I don't know if anyone from the Sheriff's Department is here today.
Yes, Madam Chair, Stuart MacDonald from the Sheriff's Coast Station.
Stuart. Oh, okay. Stuart, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Able to determine who that was.
Right. Yeah. I apologize. I always use the phone rather than the computer.
That's fine.
Madam Chair, members of the board, and the public, I'd like to inform you of our activity in the Cambria area for the month of January 2021. This year, in January, we had 48 calls for service in Cambria. That compares to the same time period last year, January, we had 55 calls for service. Of the calls for service that we handled in January, there's a slight adjustment to the report, written report I had sent in for publication in the agenda. The report I sent did not show any assaults or batteries. That wasn't correct. We did have 4 reported assault and battery incidences in January in Cambria. 3 of those were domestic violence incidents. 2 of them resulted in arrests for domestic violence. And 1 was determined that domestic violence crime did not occur. We also had 1 assault with a deadly weapon reported where someone indicated that someone had tried to hit them with a vehicle. Upon further investigation, that was determined to be no crime, that the person simply drove past another person with no intent to try to hit or harm them. There were 24 disturbance calls, most of which were noise complaints. They ranged from barking dogs to several verbal arguments that were reported as disturbances. And I noted in reviewing those calls that about half of those that were called in, the reporting person perceived that the people involved were members of the homeless community or transient population. There were 2 burglaries reported in January. One was loss of memorabilia from within a home. That case had a known suspect involved. The second burglary was loss of tools and equipment from a shed on a horse property, and there was not a known suspect in that burglary. We had 2 thefts reported. One was theft of registration paperwork out of an unlocked vehicle, and the second was a theft of coins or loose change from an unlocked vehicle. There was one vandalism report, which was damage to storage sheds in an enclosed lot in the East Village area. And the reporting person on that also believed that that might be caused by the transient population. There was 1 mail theft reported. That was on the 400 block of Cambridge Street. We had 2 phone scam reports. One was an online retailer scam with an unknown loss, and the second was a social security scam, which resulted in no loss to the victim. We did have 2 suspicious circumstance calls. A resident heard banging noises within their residence. We responded, checked the residence, and could not determine the source of the banging noise. And then the second circumstance was an unknown subject knocked on the door of a residence about 9 o'clock in the evening, That individual was gone upon our arrival for investigation. During the month of January, the deputies that serve your community conducted 43 enforcement stops. Those are stops of vehicles, pedestrians, or bicycles in circumstances where there's some violation of the vehicle code or some other reason for enforcement stops. There were 19 preventative patrol activities. That's things like extra patrol, patrol checks, foot patrols, and other crime prevention type activity throughout the month. And with that, I will take any questions that the board or public might have.
Thank you very much. Osana, do we have anyone from the public that has indicated they have a comment? No, all right, thank you. Board members, any questions or comments? All right, it appears not. Thank you very much, sir, for the report. Certainly appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome, and I look forward to being with you again next month.
Thank you. We look forward to seeing you or hearing from you.
All right, take care. Bye-bye.
Thank you. And for item 2B, we move on to the fire chief's report. Chief Hollingsworth.
Good afternoon, President Steidel, board members. Thank you for letting me be here today. This is the public safety monthly report for the fire department for the month of January. During that time frame, we had 112 emergency responses. That's compared to 105 at the same time last year. Of those, we had two fires that were responded to, one being a structure fire in town and then one being a vegetation fire as well. During the storm event, about a 48-hour cycle, we had over 30 emergency 911 calls in 48 hours. That took an additional 260 hours of staffing with the 10 additional personnel we brought on during the time frame surrounding the storm, not only ahead of time, but then some of the recovery time afterwards. And that's not to mention all of the calls that came in directly as non-emergent calls to the station that were handled by staff and admin personnel at the time. There were countless of those. And that doesn't address all of the calls that were co-shared by our auto aid partner, which is Cal Fire in this area. So it's easy to suggest that we more than doubled that number in that cycle during the storm event. But I want to thank everybody for their participation. I just find it interesting that above and beyond the regular staffing hours, there was at least 10 other personnel, full-time and reserves, that came in for a little under 300 extra hours of work because of what happened. So that's an example of going above and beyond and being able to help not only in the 911 response, but then in that co-shared responsibility of being able to help other departments as necessary. We're continuing to run about 85%, just under 85% of delivery of service to locals versus non-locals, which is just under over 15%. That's trending pretty normally as compared to relative months. Wanted to let you know that we have finalized the application to FEMA for the assistance to firefighter grant for equipment that was turned in this last week. That was approved by the board. And that's going to be for about $150,000 worth of equipment if it's awarded, with only a 5% co-share. And we are currently working on, secondary to approval and notification, the SAFER grant from FEMA. And that's going to be for at least three firefighters. And as a reminder, that's fully funded with no cost share to the district. So those take an immense amount of staff hours to put together, lots of research. Some of the stuff we're able to duplicate for the applications, which is nice, but obviously the focus is a little different, but let you know that those are in process. Final thing I wanted to let you know is that we've updated the website a little bit, and there is a inquiry for the fire department that has been added that we've expanded to include that for smoke detectors. So one of the common things that we get for non-emergency assistance throughout the community, with this being primarily an elderly community, is that there are some people that are unable to change the batteries in their smoke detectors. And we've always preached throughout the community that when during the time change is an excellent time to go ahead and be a reminder to change the batteries. And for those who cannot physically do so, they'll call the fire station and we'll coordinate a time to send a crew out to help in that process. Well, we've added that capability to the website. So those people that would rather just submit their inquiry that way, those come directly to the department and we can disseminate that information and coordinate that as necessary. Other than that, I'm over to you for any questions.
Thank you very much. I wanted to clarify with you too, or to reiterate that SAFER grant that was put forward at no cost. That's for 3 years, correct?
It is for 3 years. And the interesting thing about this, there's an entire multi-page, and when I say that, it's about 75 pages long, notice of intent for funding. And so you have to weed through all that information, but some of the priorities for awarding this grant, we directly are eligible for. So for instance, since we were forced to lay some of our personnel off from the previous SAFER grant, that theoretically puts us at a higher eligibility for awarding. That there's no guarantee, obviously, but because of where we are and we're trying to meet those specific NFPA standards that we've talked about quite a bit, they're trying to make agencies like ours more eligible. And that would make it for a 3-year period that's fully funded, correct?
Excellent. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments from the public, please?
Osana, anything? No written and nobody with their hands raised.
Okay. Thank you. Board members, any questions or comments for Chief Hollingsworth? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on. And thank you and your staff very much, Chief Hollingsworth. I know that it was an extraordinary response that all of them made in being able to support the community, and they were well served by the support that you provided. So please convey my thanks again. All right. So I'd like to move to public comment, please. And this is for items which are not on the agenda today. And do we have either people from the audience or any emails to address, Osana?
Yes. We call Christine Heinrichs. Go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon. This is regarding the CDM Smith settlement. This is not a win. This $1.7 million barely pays for the over $300,000 in legal costs and the decommissioning of this misbegotten project. It doesn't cover the initial construction costs, including the blower fans, which I understand are now rusting in the wastewater treatment plant yard. The original purpose of the impoundment pond was to manage the brine waste produced by the emergency water supply project. Lacking the impoundment pond, the district has not finalized plans for disposal of the brine waste. Remember the impoundment pond plan? The blower fans were going to evaporate the water and then the dried silt could be disposed of? Until State Parks told you that it could cost $35 million to move its campground if the district operated the blowers. At any rate, disposing of the brine waste now will be via truck, either to the South County disposal site where it will be dumped into the same ocean as here, but outside the National Marine Sanctuary. So while it is legal there, it's still using the ocean as a contaminated waste dump. Or to the Kettleman City hazardous waste facility. Both of these involve substantial cost for trucking and to pay for disposal. The South County site has a permit for a limited amount of waste and accepts waste from other agencies, so not all the waste generated could go there, depending on how much the EWS is operated. Other fanciful solutions involve running a pipeline to San Simeon and dumping the waste directly into the Marine Sanctuary, which is unlikely to get approval from other agencies. It would also cost about $1 million a mile to build the pipeline. The money the district receives from this award should be set aside as reserves for the future to brine waste disposal.
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs. Ms. Hanna?
Yes. Cynthia Replogle, go ahead.
Good afternoon, board. I'm Cynthia Replogle. I'm a director on the Oceano CSD, and I sent you all an email yesterday evening as a member, fellow member of the Integrated Waste Management Authority. I wanted to make sure that you all are aware of a current issue before the board, which is the proposed repeal of the countywide polystyrene ordinance. The ordinance was enacted in 2019. Just before it was to be implemented last April, it was put on hold for a year by the board because of the pandemic. And now the board, at their last meeting last Wednesday, has decided to move forward with potentially repealing the entire ordinance. That may come up for a first reading at the IWMA's meeting on March 10th. We have, as special districts, we have one representative, special districts representative, and that's Robert Enns with the Cayuga Sanitary District. And he was one of the board members who voted in favor of moving forward with repealing the ordinance. The Oceano CSD supported the ordinance when it was under consideration initially. And I'm not sure that Mr. N's vote was in conformance with what all the special districts would like to see happen with this ordinance. So I just wanted to make you aware, and I hope you have a chance to take a look at the attachment and the links in that email, in case you would like to weigh in on a board, as a board, on what you would like to see happen with that ordinance. Personally, as a longtime volunteer with Surf Rider, having done a lot of beach cleanups, and seeing bits of polystyrene, think styrofoam coffee cups and plates and clam shells. I've seen many of those littered on our beaches. They break down into tiny pieces. They don't ever biodegrade. That material is not recyclable. It's eaten by fish and birds who mistake it for food. And it's releasing toxins into the environment all the while. So if someone catches a fish that's been eating this plastic material and takes it home to their family can actually end up eating those toxins. So it's a human health concern as well. And so I just wanted to bring it to you so you'd have a chance to give it some consideration and weigh in if you would like to. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cynthia, and we would like to call Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much. I would like to thank the two previous speakers. You know, certainly, Madam President and Board, that you are going to discuss a question of plastics when you get to the utilities manager's report and what it might be doing to our water. So I won't reemphasize that, but I certainly want to say that our lives are so affected by plastic these days, both pleasantly, I'm sure, and a burden, that it's becoming a big policy issue for you too. So I hope that you take that up in the foreseeable future. But I want to celebrate my legacy. My legacy is a little citizen of Cambria who is budget infatuated. And you probably recall, some of you who were here then, even back in 2013-14, Madam President, I'm sure you were. Oh, I don't get any eye contact there, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, don't do your other work. Listen now to WePub, to us.
No, I was making notes about what the speakers were saying.
Madam President, I'm teasing. But you certainly remember that I had major questions about the budget for the emergency water supply project. I had them from the beginning in January of 2014, and they persisted year after year. Therefore, I want to thank Ms. Heinrichs for raising the question of how you will re-spend the money that you've already spent and now get back again in regard to that project. I want to hear your public discussion, Board of Directors of CCSD, of how you will spend that money. And I don't want you to make a decision about it until you have informed the public one of your strategic plan objectives about what you might do with the various possibilities and let us comment thereon. So my legacy lives. I still care about the budget, and I will soon be 79, and I'm going to care about the budget when I'm 80. So watch out. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Buttonhausen. Asana?
Yes, thank you. Tina Dickinson, go ahead.
Thank you, Osana. Thank you, Chair Steidel. I am going to make a suggestion because this is now 7 years since this whole project began on January 30th of 2014 of the emergency water supply. I think it has become, it has become a travesty. The ratepayers are paying more than double their bills for something that we're not getting any benefit from, for something that we were told was an emergency water supply for level 3 drought emergency conditions. It has absolutely gone in a very different direction. I'm going to ask today for this board to have it come back as the emergency water supply, as we were led to believe under a Prop 218 notice that came out June 6th of 2014. That is where I think the board needs to spend their time. We are just spending more money. We're wasting time. And how long is this going to take? So, and who is it going to benefit? So we've paid more than, we're $20 million probably now and beyond. And we've seen nothing for it except more and more problems. I'm glad that the district got some money back from the lawsuit. But I sure have problems with that, with the way the lawsuit was written and what it alleged. Because if I'd had something to say about that, it would have been quite different than what the lawyers had to say about it. But that's, I'm getting off track. I really want the board to take a serious look at where we are and where you expect to be. Because we're going on, it's already 7 years. We're going into the eighth year now of this project. So I would ask you please to take a look at going back to what the community supported. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Dickinson.
Thank you. And Julie Amodei, go ahead.
Hello and good afternoon. I just want to say Shara and I are here, and we're happy to report that last Friday we got another anonymous donation of $50,000. So that brings us to $150,000 flush. It's making its way into our bank account. And we had a very successful Valentine's fundraiser that also profited $1,800. So every dollar counts, and we just want to let you know that we're here.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you. And Director Farmer, did you want to speak?
Well, first I want to mention, I'm sure all of us, well, I shouldn't say I'm sure, but I'm almost positive that all of us on the board and those of us panelists attending know who Julie and Shara represent. I don't think that Julie mentioned that you represent the skate park and the endeavor to build a new skate park for the youngsters and the older youngsters in the community. So I just thought I'd mention that, and I want to congratulate them for raising more money for the ultimate building of the skate park. I also want to make a couple of comments with regard to public comment. You know, Elizabeth
Director Farmer,
Ms. Benton,
excuse me, Director Farmer, yes. This is the time for public comment.
All right, thank you. So
is
what you're saying
public comment, Asana? Do we have any emails?
I'm gonna check right now. No emails. Thank you.
All right, so we'll move on to the consent agenda.
And
so, President Steidel, you're saying that as a member of the board, I do not have the opportunity to comment on public comment. Is that what you're saying?
Well, the public comment is structured so that it's directed to the president. So if there was comment to be made, unless it was directed specifically to a member of staff or to a specific director for feedback, that's the case, yes.
Well, I thought what I was going to say had some benefit to the community at large, but I guess I'll just have to pass on it.
I'm sure you'll have plenty of opportunity to be able to do that, Director Farmer. Okay, we'll move to the consent agenda. And so first, let me ask if there's anything that any director finds on consent agenda that they would want to pull at this time. And Director Gray, if you don't mind, I'm going to go to Director Dean first, as she had mentioned something earlier.
Okay. In the standing committee bylaws that we provided for this agenda packet, under number two, committee members, it looks like we didn't make it clear what the pool of applicants would be for filling a vacancy. So we wanted to make a slight adjustment to 2.3D, where it says prior to the beginning of a term, the CCSD of a term, or in the event.
I'm sorry, Director Dean, I apologize, but if there's going to be a change to the item, what we need to do is pull it from consent, and we'll address it as a standalone item.
I wasn't
and
sure.
The other consent items.
I wasn't
is
sure.
That, is that satisfactory for you?
That's perfectly fine.
Okay. Thank you. Director Gray?
Yeah, I have a question on the minutes. It shouldn't need to be pulled, but on it's a minor thing, but on January 24th minutes, under item 5A, there's a description of the various motions that were done for the ad hoc committee regarding the CDP. There's a mention of me moving to amend the motion stated by Vice President Howell. It's confusing because there's no description of what I was, you know, what the amendment was that I was proposing. And I went back to the tape. I was proposing that the motion be amended to include the appointment of the two people of President Steidel and member Dean. So I don't know if that would be just confusing to the reader or needs to be cleared up, because it basically added something to the motion.
Okay, fine. Could you tell me which page that was, please?
It's page 19 of the agenda, and it's under regular business 5A on the January 14th meeting.
Okay. So basically, you're just adding the additional information to
the amendment, and it was, you know, the amendment was accepted to add, in addition to Director Howell's motion to create the ad hoc committee, this added with that same motion the appointment of the two members, President Steidel and member Dean.
Okay, fine.
Just to clarify what that was.
Right. Mr. Carmel, I don't believe that would constitute a change to the agenda, but just a clarification. So we should be able to make that adjustment against the agenda minutes, correct?
Yes, indeed.
Okay. Thank you. All right. So Asana, were you able to see what Director Gray was indicating?
Yes, so he wants me to say amend to include the appointment of two people, Steidel and Dean.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if you that as an inclusion to the meeting minutes, please.
Will do.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. And
President Steidel.
No, do we need to pull to do that though?
No.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Carmel.
Question from
and
question
Vice from President Howell.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I need to jump in on this. It's still not clear, though. I can't tell from reading it whether Director Gray moved to amend the motion and then there was a second and a vote, or whether it was accepted as a friendly amendment. So I think that needs to be clarified.
Yeah. It's the latter. It was accepted as a friendly amendment.
Okay. So, Osana, what you really want to say then is Director Gray moved to amend the motion. Then you need to state what the amendment was. And then you need to say Director Howell accepted the amendment. Now, I have a question is, what motion did Director Farmer, which motion did he second? Was it the original motion or was it Director Gray's motion?
It was actually both.
Okay. So
he was the second on the original motion, and so he had to accept the friendly amendment.
Got it. Okay. So Osana, what you need to indicate is that the mover accepted the friendly amendment and the original second also accepted the friendly amendment. Mm-hmm. And then we had the vote on the.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm sorry, Director Gray. You're right. It was very unclear. I mean, the end result is still the same. But
yeah, somebody reading it might wonder.
I think it's important to get the back and forth on
yeah.
this.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Sorry for the interruption there, folks.
No, I appreciate
That's
it.
Okay. That's okay. It's yeah.
President Steidel, just to add, I looked at this with Osana multiple times. It was really difficult from the video to figure out what actually was happening there. So I appreciate the help.
You had to skip to the end.
We tried. I tried.
I watched it today too, because I couldn't remember if I made an amendment. So it was confusing. A little confusing.
Can you, Director Gray, can you send me a little blurb in an email exactly what you want written then?
Yeah, I think maybe Vice President Howell had it. Vice President Howell had it really well.
Okay.
He nailed it. Do you want to do that?
So, Vice President Howell, could I ask you please to be able to supplement that information for Osana for incorporation into the minutes?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm fighting there.
So if it's all right with the board, I can do it offline. Is that acceptable to everybody?
I think she wants it. Yeah.
Will you please remind me to do this? I'm going to forget otherwise. So thank you, Osana. It's now in your lap. So you get back to me and we'll work it through.
Thank you. Okay. So if we go back to the consent agenda itself. So right now, the only item that is being pulled for discussion is the Standing Committee bylaws 4D. Do I hear any other items under consent that are being requested for pull? Director Farmer?
No, I don't necessarily want to pull anything, but I just want to mention in the expenditure report with regard to the cost for the so-called sustainable water facility. It's for this past month, it's been $343,400 and change. And of course, that includes the loan payment to Western Alliance Bank that we make twice a year, each of them being just under $330,000. Plus, regarding the aforementioned brine waste, we paid the $500 annual fee to South County Sanitation District in case we need to ultimately haul some brine to that facility. So I just wanted to mention those two items. Thank you.
Anything additionally, board? All right. We'll go ahead and pull 4D for discussion. So what I'd like to do is entertain a motion, please, for passing the or voting on the balance of the consent agenda, which would be A, B, C, and E.
I so move.
Thank you. Director Dean moves and Director Gray seconds.
Seconds. Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Osana, may we have the roll call, please?
Yes. Motion to approve the A, B, C, and E from the consent agenda. Director Dean.
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean. Aye. Director Gray.
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray. Aye. Director Farmer.
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Aye. Vice President Howell.
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. Aye. And President Steidel.
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel. 5 ayes.
Thank you. So the consent agenda minus 4D is passed 5-0. Thank you. All right. Consent agenda 4D then is, and Director Dean, are you going to be discussing this item or?
Yes, please.
Okay.
Okay. So on reviewing the amendments that we made to the standing committee bylaws regarding the appointment of committee members, Director Howell and I realized that 2.4 was not very clear of what the pool of applicants was that we would be appointing vacancy replacements from. So we would like to adjust 2.3D slightly to read prior to the beginning of a term, comma, or in the event of a vacancy during an unexpired term, comma, the CCSD shall invite applications for committee membership. So just that slight change in that sentence so that it's clear that the pool of applicants that we will be appointing for vacancies will include new applicants as well as the ones that already applied. That would be, I'm not sure if Director Howell has anything else.
Okay. So 2.4 then, I just was checking to see if there's anything there that ends up. It references back to 2.3D. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Anything else then, Vice President Howell, that you wanted to contribute?
I think we're good. I did, as Director Dean was reading it, though, it did occur to me, it was our intention that the applications that are submitted be retained on file, at least for the two-year period, but it never actually say that. I don't know if we need to say that. I'm okay with not saying that, but I thought I should at least mention that that was sort of our intention. And anyway, that was the thought I had.
Okay, Director Dean?
We do say that in 2.3E, that any applications received in 2.3D shall be retained by the district.
And remain active.
We did put that in there.
Okay.
Fine.
Good teamwork. All right. Are there any other comments as far as this agenda item 4D is concerned? Okay, not seeing any. What we'll do then is I'll entertain a motion for this agenda item 4D.
I so move.
And we seconded by?
Sorry, go ahead.
I second.
Okay, Director Gray seconds. So motion for consideration of the ad hoc committee's recommended updates to the standing committee bylaws. Motion by Director Dean, seconded by Director Gray. Osana, could you do the roll, please?
Yes. Director Dean?
Aye.
Okay, Director Dean, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray. Aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Aye. Vice President Howell.
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President. Aye. And President Steidel.
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Steidel. Aye. 5-0.
Thank you. So the agenda item 4D is passed 5-0. Thank you. That then takes into consideration the consent agenda, and we can move on to regular business. And regular business 5A, GM Weigold, could you introduce this, please?
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 5A is discussion and consideration to fill seats on the Finance, Policy, and Resources and Infrastructure Standing Committees. Staff is recommends that the Board of Directors consider appointing applicants from the pool of applications to fill the vacancies on all three standing committees. Per your now recently a few minutes ago approved standing committee bylaws.
Thank you, GMY Gold. So in moving this forward, I think I'd probably like to take the committees individually, one at a time. And I think probably the most straightforward of those is the finance and the policy committee, considering that the R&I committee has a number of positions that are being filled. So if I may, Director Gray, I'm assuming that you've had an opportunity to, yes, Mr. Weigold?
I was just going to remind you of public comment.
Thank you. Well, I was trying to, okay, let's do this before we have the conversation. Thank you. So do I see any public comment, or is there any public comment regarding the process? Lasana, you don't see any, were there any
No written and nothing
All right.
From the public.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. And thank you for the reminder, GM Weigold, I appreciate it. So in moving forward, I think first I'd like to ask Director Gray if he's been able to establish his recommendations for the committee positions.
Yes. So I'll just give you my recommendations. Do we vote on them individually, or do the vote them at the end when all three committee recommendations are
well,
here? Just
my suggestion is that we'd be voting on it as a whole based on the recommendations okay. that you're bringing forward.
So you know, my recommendations are as follows. The existing committee members, Marvin Korn, Dwayne Lee, Mary Maher, Cheryl McDowell, and Ted Siegler.
Fine. Thank you. So what we're going to do is go ahead and vote on each of the committees as the information comes forward to us. So I'd entertain a motion, please, for the recommendations that Director Gray has made for the Finance Committee. And Vice President Howell?
Yes, I move that the individuals named by Director Gray be appointed for a 2-year term on the Finance Committee.
Thank you. And Director Dean?
I second the motion.
Thank you. So the motion is moved and seconded. And Osana, if you could please call the roll on this.
Yes. To fill the seats for the Finance Committee using Director Gray's recommendations, Director Howell, Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
Aye. Sorry.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. And Director Dean?
Aye.
Aye, Director Dean, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer, aye. And Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray, aye. And President Steidel?
Aye.
Thank you, President Steidel, aye. 5 ayes. Thank you.
So the board moves 5-0 for placement on the Finance Committee on the basis of recommendations from the Finance Committee Chair, Director Gray. And what I'd like to do is call for information next on the Policy Committee. So, Vice President Howell.
Thank you, President Steidel. First of all, the 4 members of the current committee have expressed a desire to continue, and they've all done excellent work, and I'm pleased to have them continue. And those are Claudia Harmon-Worthen, Leslie Richards, Ted Key, and I'm pulling a blank suddenly. Oh, God, I hate
Gordon Heinrichs.
Thank you. Thank
you. Okay.
Okay. So okay. Now I'm back. To fill the vacancy, I've had a very good conversation with Stephen Boyette, and I think he will make a very excellent addition to the committees, and he's graciously agreed to serve. So I'm very pleased to nominate him as well.
Excellent. Thank you. All right. On the basis then of recommendations from Vice President Howell, Chair of the Policy Committee, do I hear a motion for placement of the candidates? Director Dean?
I so move.
And seconded?
I'll make a second. And I don't know if I'm a little out of line here, but I see Mr. Boyette is one of the attendees. Perhaps he might want to make a comment or two before we make the vote or after we make the vote, just to welcome him aboard, because I know he's a relatively recent arrival in here in Cambria, so it'd be nice to hear his voice. I just wanted to make that comment.
I appreciate that, Director Farmer. Thank you. After we've taken the vote for placement, it was my intention to do just that. So I appreciate that. Thank you. Mm-hmm. So, Osana, may we have the roll, please?
Yes. For recommended policy committee members, motioned by Director Dean, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean. Aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Gray. Aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell. Aye. And President Steidel?
Aye.
Thank you, and President Steidel. Five ayes.
Thank you. All right, excellent. So in the case of recommendation for policy committee members by Vice President Howell, that is passed by 5-0. And Asana, if you would please, if Mr. Boyette would be willing to say a few words, we can offer our congratulations to him also, if you could unmute him.
Sure. Mr. Boyette, go ahead.
There he is. Okay.
Yes, good afternoon, Madam President and members of the board. I had the pleasure of speaking briefly with both Board Member Howell and Board Member Dean, and very excited to join the Standing Committee on Policy and contribute in any way that I can.
Thank you very much, and appreciate your volunteering to do that. We definitely are graced with the benefit of the people who volunteer to assist in these ways with the community, and it's very much appreciated. So thank you.
Thank you.
All right, we'll move to then the R&I committee and Director Dean.
Okay, I have three committee members who would like to continue to serve. That would be Brad Fowles, Jim Webb, and David Pearson. And all three of them have been great contributors to the committee and have done good work, and we all get along well together, and I'd like to keep them.
Okay.
I have two vacancies, had four applications, and I've spoken to all of them. And I would like to have Stephen Sieber fill one of the vacancies and Mike Thomas. Steve Sieber comes to us with an amazing amount of background experience in wastewater, water, SCADA, electrical conservation, water conservation, and is very enthused about protecting our environment. And Mike Thomas comes to us with a great background in engineering and is very focused on preserving our forest and on water conservation. And I think the two of them would make great additions to the Standing Committee on Resources and Infrastructure. And I know that Steve Sieber is attending today. So if when we get done with the vote, if we'd like to see if he'd like to make a few words, that would be great. I know that Mike Thomas is on the road, and I don't think he was able to call in today.
All right. Thank you for the heads up on that. Appreciate that. So I'd like to entertain a motion, please, for the placement of individuals on the R&I Standing Committee made by Director Dean. And so a motion by Director Gray.
Motion. I so move to accept Director Dean's recommendations for the Resources and Infrastructure Committee.
Thank you. Do I hear a second?
Director Farmer?
Thank you. All right. Osana.
Yes.
The roll, please.
Yes. And so for a motion to accept Dean's recommendations for the R&I committee, how do you vote, Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Director Farmer, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Thank you, Director Dean, aye. Vice President Howell?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President Howell, aye. And President Steidel?
Aye.
Thank you, Vice President. Why am I saying that? President Steidel, aye. So five.
You were used to saying it.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. So the motion is passed 5-0 for accepting the recommendations of R&I Committee Chair, Director Dean, for the placement of the membership for that committee. Thank you very much. And as Mr. Sieber is in the audience, if he would like to say hello, we'd like to welcome him also. Could you unmute him, please?
Go ahead, Mr. Sieber.
Hello, President Board. I'm really looking forward to helping the district in any way that I can with water and wastewater.
Well, excellent. Appreciate the time and opportunity you're offering to us by wanting to participate on the committee, and also look forward to the contributions I'm sure that you'll be making. So thank you very much for considering participation in our standing committee structures. It's a real asset to the district to have people who will volunteer to do this. So thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
All right, so that takes that into consideration. Now, do we have any public comment at all regarding this agenda item?
No,
I do not see any. And any letters or emails?
No.
All right, fine. Okay, that takes care of agenda item 5A, and I'm very, very pleased to see that the committees have been able to again attract some very capable people to help us make the district work and to be able to rely upon for their advice. So thank you all for taking the time to want to continue to participate, because I know it isn't always the smoothest process in the world to have to be taking a look at the kinds of things that we do and having to adjust any kind of special meetings that the timing of items may require of you. So it's a heartfelt thanks that I send to all of you for your participation. And what we will do then is move on to agenda item 5B. GM Weigold, if you would introduce this for us, please.
Yes, President Steidel. Agenda item 5B is discussion and consideration of the strategic plan status report and update. Staff recommends that the Board of Directors discuss and consider the monthly updates to the strategic plan. As you know, congratulations, first of all, to the board on adopting the strategic plan at last week's board meeting on the 11th. So as we literally had just a few hours to post this, there are not a lot of updates since you adopted this, but in working with President Steidel and Vice President Howell, we will be having a monthly regular agenda item, which will include the board reviewing the status of the strategic plan, specifically the objectives. So while this is not meant to be a review of the goals and objectives, it's rather an update on basically, how are we doing on getting to those objectives over the next 6 months? So what you see before you is the same grid from last week, but you'll see a couple of changes in red that you made last week. And then what we'll be doing is adding comments on the far right-hand column and checking appropriate block of under the status columns of where we are at any given time for each monthly update. And then this will give the board a chance to discuss with any of the people that are executing that objective at the time of the board discussion. With that, I'll perhaps turn it over to President Steidel or any questions you may have.
Okay, thank you. I would like to say that, you know, getting, we'll have to establish our process for ourselves a little bit as we move through this. But if we keep the idea that the focus towards it is being able to objectively look at the objectives that we had set for ourselves, and as necessary, if we find that some fine tuning of them is what will be more appropriate for the timeline as we move forward, or as we become aware of circumstances, then we need to be thinking in those terms also. But I'm very much looking forward to getting used to the regular idea of maintaining this as a focus and a status, because it'll assist us in moving things forward, because the amount of work and content we have to deal with at times, it's easy to move the focus away from maybe the things that we need to keep up at the top of the list. So I think this will make us more capable in what we're doing, and I appreciate the contributions of the people who participated in the strategic planning and are still continuing to participate in some of the processes that these objectives lay out. So thank you for that. So although there isn't a whole lot of change, or any change actually, for the strategic plan, as an initial statement of it having been presented, I would like to take a motion for the acceptance and the seconding, so that we can move this forward as a process. And my expectation is that the next time we go through this next month, we'll have some items for discussion and status. So do I hear a motion?
Let's see. I could move, I think. I'm not sure what we want here. Let's try this and see if this works.
Okay.
I move that we accept General Manager Weigold's report regarding our six-month strategic objectives, along with the changes that he has indicated. Is that sufficient? Does that work?
I don't know that we have to do anything about the changes, because if I'm not mistaken, we actually codified that when we accepted the strategy. We did the fine tuning and voted on that. Unless I'm mistaken, but I think that was the case. So
you're right. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to talk over you.
Oh, no, that's fine.
Report I think we need more than just accepting the report. Accepting the report and the plan to move forward as suggested, or something. Mm-hmm. What I'm after there, because what we are doing is we want to imply that we want some future actions.
Okay.
Smiling. I'm not sure why.
Well, something along the lines of accepting the status report as presented, with a forward look for our next period of review, or something along those lines. Yeah. I mean, is that just words? Director Gray?
Comment. Yeah, maybe to clarify. I what I see happening with this monthly review or regular review is that when there is as we work through these objectives with the staff and with our committees, we will find, from time to time that things need to be revised especially in terms of maybe targets and deadlines. Mm-hmm. And I think the purpose of this is when there's a change that needs to be made, given what's going on with our experience with the projects, we bring it to the board and say, here are the changes. The board approves the changes. So we always will have an adopted, current, accurate, basically plan right before us. So I think just to accept this current report would be fine for me.
Because
that's going to be the case. So, yeah.
Right, because the idea of the discussion and consideration is the flexibility of needing to have something to be voting on if there are changes that happen because of
process. Changing a target date or something like
right.
that.
Right, yeah. Okay. Is that an acceptable approach then for the balance of the board?
Yeah, I think so. If possible, I think it's good.
We probably just need the simple restatement of the motion if we can. Is that something you would still want to do, Vice President Al?
Or Rosanna, do you want to do it?
I think I got something.
Okay.
So as he said it, but Vice President Howell moves to accept the GM report regarding the 6-month strategic plans status report as presented.
Good.
Excellent.
I second.
Thank you.
Okay, great. All right. Okay. And so,
Rosanna, thank you for your assistance in helping us get there. And could you call roll, please?
Sure thing. So Vice President Howell, how do you?
Aye,
thank you. Director Gray?
Aye.
Director Dean?
Aye.
And Director Farmer?
Aye.
And President Steidel?
Aye.
Thank you. 5-0 ayes.
Excellent, thank you. So agenda item 5B. Is voted upon and passed 5-0. Thank you, Board.
President Steidel?
Yes.
If I may disrupt things for just a second.
Sure.
I just now noticed that our new appointee, Mike Thomas, is on the phone watching this meeting. And since we let the other appointees introduce themselves, would it be all right if he introduced himself?
Absolutely. Okay. Which is, he must be the 925 number.
Yes, he is the 925.
Okay, fine. So, Osana, if you could unmute Mr. Thomas, please. Mr. Thomas, welcome.
Unmute yourself, please. Go ahead. There we go.
Well, good afternoon. This is Michael Thomas. And yes, I have been listening. From the road, and it will be my great honor to join the committee and serve the community of Cambria.
Well, thank you.
Well, your volunteerism is very much appreciated, and it certainly sounds that you'll be a welcome addition to the committee and also assist in broadening the scope of skill set and background to make the committee even stronger. So thank you very much, sir, and we look forward to having a chance to meet you in person or through Zoom at least at some point in the future. Thank you.
The sooner the better. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Dean. I appreciate you bringing that to our attention.
Thank you.
All right, so the 5B has been addressed.
Excuse me, yep. I see that Jim Weigold has had his hand up there. I'm not sure that you saw that.
No, I did not.
I just wanted to check and see if you wanted to take any public comment on that last item.
Well, I didn't see, I'm unfortunately what I had done is I have the attendee list up and I had looked and there happened not to be any hands up, but I'll ask formally. Thank you, Jim Weigold.
There are no written comments either.
Thank you, Osana. So we will move then to agenda item 5C, and Mr. Weigold, if you would introduce that, please.
Yes, President Steidel, agenda item 5C is discussion and consideration of draft policy on encampments on district property. The policy committee recommended that the board of directors review the draft policy on encampments, which are attached for those encampments that may be located on district property and discuss and consider adoption of the same.
Okay, fine. And I do believe, Vice President Howell, I don't know whether you would want to have Mr. Carmel introduce his suggested changes first before opening it for discussion with you, or what's your preference here?
I I guess the main purpose here, I really don't want to bring this to a vote today. What I really want to do is hear from the board members, their own reactions to this. And then it probably would be well, I think, because you will be reacting since the board has not seen the version that has Mr. Carmel's suggestion. Mr. Carmel, would you mind reading that paragraph where you put the change in, if that's permissible with everybody? And then what I would like to do is I would really like to use this as an opportunity to simply provide feedback to the committee on this one, so that we can try to craft something that will be as acceptable as we can possibly make it for you. So, I think it's a good way to kind of experiment a little bit with this, with an iterative process as we go forward, especially where we're dealing with difficult areas. So that's the way I would like to proceed if it's agreeable.
Certainly that would be, I don't see anyone indicating that they prefer another alternative. So Mr. Carmel, could you please provide us with some feedback about your suggested
I'd be glad to, Madam President. So in section 2225.3.1, I changed the second sentence to read, thus, comma, after providing proper notice and appropriately storing personal property and belongings, comma, all illegal homeless encampments shall be removed from district property promptly. I struck the words upon discovery because you need time to notice and you need time to remove the belongings and store them. And then the second sentence, or the sentence after that, I struck the words intent and. So the sentence now reads, and clean sites shall be restored to their original condition, period.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's good.
And just as an explanation, courts have made it really clear that you have to give proper notice, you have to store belongings before you clean the encampment. There was a PG&E, there was a Caltrans case that settled a couple weeks ago for $500,000 for those very reasons. So they're pretty critical.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Carmel. That also highlights for us, I think, the significance of the wording that we use within the construct of this policy. Does the board want to hear any public comment first, or do they want to have discussion on this item themselves? Is there a preference?
I think
Director Gray?
Public comment would normally come first, I think.
All right. Yeah. All right. And let's see, is there any public comment, Osana, letters, emails? No. All right. So we'll move
no
on.
No written, then nobody has their hand up.
Right. Okay. Thank you. So we'll move to board discussion on the item then. Anyone have any specifics they'd like to, Director Farmer?
No, I just want to express my appreciation for comment that legal counsel Mr. Carmel made that kind of heightened the sensitivity that we should have to let's say another human being that obviously is in distress, just to acknowledge their existence and their humanity. I mean, that's kind of the feeling I have toward that. Also, right down at the last sentence, the last few words where it says with the appropriate county agencies as well, and the word as should be placed in there. And I'd also like to know what conservation stakeholders, who that applies to, if Vice President Howell can inform us there.
President Stardane, may I respond?
Yes, go ahead.
At this time, all I really want to do is take actually commentary from you all, unless you really want to enter into a discussion with me, because what I want to do is take everything that you say, listen to this tape, you know, and then take everything that you said back to the committee. But so I don't know if you want to really, I'd be glad to answer any questions, but the real purpose from my point of view is to get your opinions as to how we can make this a better policy or what. And by the way, I need to ask you to be frank. If there's something you don't like, you need to make it clear that you don't like it and why. I really would appreciate, and the committee would appreciate that. As to your question, President Farmer, if you wish to ask it again, and if the president thinks it's appropriate, I'll be glad to answer it. But otherwise, yeah, it's really not so much. I'm not trying to push this through. What I'm really trying to do is use this as a, and without taking a lot of time, use this as a chance to get some feedback so that the committee is not operating in a vacuum here.
Okay. All right. Are there comments from any directors? Director Gray?
This isn't more than the form of a question, and it might be something that Mr. Carmel will probably be the best person to answer. I have a question about the term, use of the term illegal. In illegal camping activities, it's used, I think, three times. And also it's paired sometimes with non-sanctioned and other terms. Is that my concern is that may be too restrictive, because it is public property, and to, you know, what is inherently illegal in public property, and I'm not a lawyer on this, but I know that if you know, if it's public property, is there something in the, you know, like state law or court or the court record that would make it, you know, less illegal, whatever, than it would be on private property? And should we just say, for instance, instead of saying illegal, say unauthorized or public camping not authorized by the CCSD or something like that, to focus on the fact that the CCSD is trying to protect its property and insists on being able to do so? So the short answer is the word illegal going to open up a little bit of a Pandora's box?
Good question.
Yeah.
Mr. Carmel?
Do you want me to respond to that? With regard to the public or private, in fact, private property is considered a little more sacred. Court decisions have actually said that a person has a right to sleep on public property in some instances. Yeah. I had the same reaction. My reaction was the use of the phrase in the beginning of 22531, illegal non-sanctioned homeless encampments on district property, which to me implies that there are legal sanctioned homeless encampments.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Sort of stressed by
exactly.
Yeah.
We don't sanction encampments on our property. We may one day. So I really didn't think that phrase was necessary, but wasn't really a legal issue, so I left it.
Yeah. Just in general terms, I think the more adjectives you put in front of something, the more it makes it, weakens it in a way. You know, it's less solid as a prohibition.
Right, yeah.
Are there any other comments from other directors? Director Dean?
Yeah, I like the term unauthorized better than illegal. But although non-sanctioned kind of means the same thing, I think. I don't know, the term illegal just kind of bugs me a little bit.
May I?
Yes, please.
Two things. I do want to be sure that if President Director Farmer had a question, that I didn't want to dodge it. The other thing I kind of wondering, though, is in a way, a policy such, and I'm only speaking for myself, not for the committee. We could have such a simple policy as simply to say camping is not allowed on district property. Something just as simple as that. So it might be a subject that the board might want to actually consider. On the other hand, and we need to remember this, there before the old dog park was moved, and before we let the historical society, before we sold that, leased that property to them, that area used to be used for camping during Pine Dorado. And so that would have been actually a, as it were, authorized encampment. So I guess the issue is, does the board wish to take a position in general about camping, or do we wish to be more specific? I don't have an opinion, but I think this sort of came up, and I think maybe that is why they chose that rather long there. Because if it had been me and I was just doing it alone, I would have just said camping is not permitted.
Well,
May I ask, Director Farmer, you did ask a question and I didn't want to dodge it. I wanted to be sure that people understood what I was doing here. So did you get an answer to it, or do I need to answer it for you again or as well?
I'll call you on the phone and you can answer it.
Oh, thank you. And that reminds me, and this is a question for council. Is it permissible now that all of the board has seen what we're proposing, is it permissible for them to write me emails individually, giving me their opinions so that I could assemble them and bring them to the committee? Or are we skirting the Brown Act a little too close?
I think that's permissible as long as it goes only to you.
Okay. So having said that, folks, I would urge you, please, we will not be discussing this at our next meeting. So we've got a few more weeks, but I may wish to remind you all if you have any additional thoughts on this. In fact, again, Mr. Carmel, if the committee were to have something, you know, to produce something, rather than take board time here to reiterate back and forth, how would it be if I just sent what they produce to the individual board members who could then respond to me individually? Or is, again, am I going, are we
that
going?
That sounds.
What do you think?
That's acceptable as well.
Good. Thank you. That's going to save a lot of time. Thank you very much.
Now, of course, all those will need to be shared publicly when you come back and the items reintroduced.
Right. So no private communications, but it'll give us something. Well, it gives us what we need, which is the feedback, in order to come up with good policies. So I appreciate that. That'll be I've been operating under a different assumption. So that's good. Thank you.
Director Farman?
I just want to affirm and support the comments that were made first by Director Gray and then Director Dean with regard to not using the word illegal. Over the decades, it has a more distasteful implication to it. Like I say, with each passing year, and the use of unauthorized is probably more applicable. So I just wanted to comment there.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Director Gray?
Yeah, just to round that off, what Director Farmer is saying, I think what getting back to the camping, issue, I think maybe it's good to say, going back to what we're saying about camping not being permitted as a general principle, maybe we should say camping is not permitted on CCSD property unless expressly authorized. And then you can use the term unauthorized camping following from that. So that might be a suggestion for the update.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I do have some observations I wanted to pass on too, which I don't see anything in the policy that reflects, for instance, the construct from the county at all about its position on homeless or encampments. And granted, this is specific to CCSD property, but we also have to work within the constraints of what the county passes to us as a special district. So I don't know that that's reflected here. I don't know if there is something that needs to be considered in that way. So I guess I would ask that of the committee also, what kind of information had been reviewed relative to the county requirements. As a preference, I would prefer seeing fewer adjectives. If we're going to describe a policy, that tends to be something that's expressed in concrete terms. And statements like foster criminal activities, to me, has a really negative connotation, and it's a value judgment. It isn't something the idea that a homeless person fosters criminal activities, I think, flies in the face of how we want to try to think in terms of what homelessness is. And heavily entrenched populations. Again, it's the same kind of language, I guess, that to me doesn't reflect the idea of a policy. Policies tend to be don't use adjectives and tend to be concrete in terms of reference for structure, legal requirements, and process that has to be accommodated. And I'm not getting the feel of that from this. So that's my offering to the conversation. So unless someone has something else I'd like to add, Vice President Howell, you indicated that you weren't looking to actually have consideration on this today. So other than maybe taking a motion to move it to a date certain or move it to further review by the committee.
Let's do that. Let's have a motion to refer it back to committee. And by the way, thank you everybody for your input. And I look forward to your emails. And as I said, you don't need to soft pedal. I mean, it's nice to be polite, but you do also need to be very clear about, you know, if you, something you don't like, as President Seidel very kindly put it, there are some things that we need to be brought forward, because otherwise we're never going to know. So thank you very much, everybody. So if I may move to send this back to committee to be worked on and brought back at a future board meeting.
Okay. Do I hear a second in that? Director Dean?
Oh, second.
Okay. So Asana, could you call roll, please?
Sure. For item 5C, Vice President Howell moved to send the item back to the committee and be brought back at a later date, which is unidentified right now. So Vice President Howell, how do you vote?
Aye.
Thank you. Vice President Howell, aye. Director Dean?
Aye.
Director Dean, aye. Director Gray?
Aye.
Thank you. Director Gray, aye. Director Farmer?
Aye.
Thank you. Director Farmer, aye. And President Seidel?
Aye.
Thank you. President Seidel, aye. 5 ayes. Thank you.
Thank you. So agenda item 5C moves back to committee on a motion, and that is passed 5-0 by the board. Thank you.
President Seidel?
Yes.
I just wanted to compliment you on your observations with regard to those rather descriptive terms that are kind of a turn off, foster criminal activities and heavily entrenched. I appreciate you highlighting those as probably not necessary. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, so we've moved then to agenda item 5D, and GM Weigold, if you would introduce this, please.
Yes, President Stridell. Agenda item 5D is discussion and consideration of the second quarter budget report for fiscal year 2020/2021. Staff is recommending that the board discuss, review, and approve the second quarter budget report for the fiscal year, or provide other direction to the staff as deemed appropriate. I'll note that the Finance Committee reviewed this budget report on January 26th during their meeting and recommended approval by a 5-0 vote. I'll pass this over for further presentation to our Finance Director, Pam Duffield.
Thank you, GM Weigold. And I will, if you don't mind, Ms. Duffield, I'll ask for public comment first before we move into the particulars of the review. And Osana?
Yes, I have a raised hand. Go ahead, Elizabeth Bettenhausen.
Thank you very much, Madam President and Board Secretary. I would like you please to look at page 85. And I have a question of, is there any explanation for why the water fund revenues are greater than the expenditures during the second quarter, but the water fund revenues are less than expenditures during the second quarter for SWF operations and capital outlay? I'm assuming it might have to do with the payment being due, but what I don't quite understand why are the revenues so significantly less for SWF than one might expect given the rate increases?
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. Are there any other public comments, Asana?
No written.
All right, and no emails or letters. Okay, thank you. Ms. Duffield, if you could lead us through the review of the second quarter budget report, please.
All right, thank you. Good afternoon, President Steidel and members of the board. So this is the second quarter report, and that covers all activity from July 1st of 2020 through December 31st of 2020. That's quarter one and two. And during the second quarter, which is October 1st through December 31st, your board did approve two budget adjustments, and those are included in the colored sheets that you will see in a moment. One of those budget adjustments was for the grant for the personal protective equipment for fire, and another was for the restroom design that was put into the PROS budget. Overall, the general fund revenues, there's nothing screaming that we have any significant issues through the second quarter. You know, we're kind of going with the trend, we're waiting on the property taxes to kind of catch up along with the expenditure patterns that happen. You know, keeping in mind our big ticket item that we have to pay for at the very beginning of the fiscal year is the liability insurance. And that happens on July 1st, I think it's due by the 5th of every year. So that happens right at the beginning of the fiscal year. And that tends to kind of skew our overall expenditures because it doesn't happen, 1/12 through the year. We are seeing most of our property taxes coming in. I think we're at about 60% through the end of January. So, we're still seeing, we saw a couple of big payments in January, which aren't reflected in this, of course. And then now we're kind of seeing the activity trickle down, and then we'll see it kick up again, during the next go round when taxes are due on April 1st. Other than, we have to balance our COVID expenditures that have happened a lot through the general fund, because that's impacted the fire staff quite a lot. We're not really seeing a big increase in expenses. We're actually seeing a decrease in training costs because, there's not a lot of live trainings that staff are going to. If they do sign up for any trainings, it's going to be more of a virtual, and we're going to be saving travel expenses and meals and things like that. So, I don't have anything really to significantly point out to your report in the general fund. And then it's pretty much the same situation in the enterprise funds. Their, revenue is it's trending based on the billing cycles that have occurred. And, the expenditures, are coming through, as things are happening. Subsequent to this reporting period, we have had a significant event that was mentioned earlier, and that is the storms that happened at the end of January. We're still getting damage assessments on, what it's going to take to make those corrective actions. So, right now we're having estimates around 400,000. That amount could go up, that amount could go down. Those are kind of our best guess when, the managers have looked at the damages that occurred at their particular responsible locations. And until we get in there and we get the people that, the expert vendors that would make these repairs, those are just our best estimates at the point in time that those were taken. So again, those amounts could go up or down, and we are still continuing to evaluate that, and budget adjustments will likely be needed But until we have those concrete amounts of what we need and at what point in time, you know, we're going to try to package it to you, you know, together as much as we possibly can, and not have to bring you, you know, multiple budget adjustments, you know, every board meeting. So, you know, we're analyzing that data and we will be reporting back, you know, as we have new information. Something else that has occurred that I kind of highlighted in my report as well, and this affects the general fund, not the enterprise funds, is the cost of what we were just discussing in the last item is the cleanup for encampments. So I noted that in the encampment report, and then I noted it again in this report, just so that you're aware that those costs keep increasing. It's something that the district really is hard pressed to control. You know, we can try to budget based on what happened in the last fiscal year, but, you know, due to COVID and some of the things that have occurred, you know, in our environment, you know, that budget wasn't enough for what we're seeing, you know, during this fiscal year. So we are continuing to assess those costs. And once we, you know, have a good number for you, you know, we will need a budget adjustment, you know, is my guess, to make sure that, you know, it's memorialized in the facilities budget what we need to do that. And then facilities will also likely need the gist of the budget adjustment because they did sustain the major part of the damage during, you know, the storms that we had. So, you know, that's kind of the recap that's happened since the quarterly report dates, just so you're aware, you know, what's coming down the pike. As far as the public comment question from Mrs. Bettenhausen, that's probably not a quick answer that I can give. I would need to look back to, you know, the revenue trends and see, you know, what is happening in water and SWF to be able to answer her questions. So it's not something I will just be able to give a quick answer without doing some research. So I will work with the general manager and we will follow up and circle back to her question.
Excellent, thank you. I will certainly entertain any questions by the other directors, but I do have a question while we're fresh on having discussed the items that are, you know, potentially going to be impacting the general fund, because that's probably in the most significant place, both because of what's gone on with COVID, what's gone on with the storm, and also the fact that we have obligations within the district that we've never had revenue sources established for being able to maintain, such as the ranch. So the damages that you had mentioned in the potential insurance applications, I'm just saying this in anticipation so that the people in the community will have a chance to recognize this. We may have outlays of monies to be able to make recovery for ourselves before we either get settlement of insurance for those things or before any other government agency potentially would be interacting in the process, such as FEMA. But there are a lot of criteria that have to be accomplished at the state level before FEMA would even be coming into the process for public agencies. So that is something that is a downline effect, and we may have a staggering effect that goes on in terms of the costs that we incur versus our ability to recover some of those costs against those expenses. Is that an appropriate statement, Ms. Duffield?
So it actually will not be FEMA, because at this point, the president has not made a declaration. So at this point, it stays within the state level, and that would be disaster relief from the state of California Office of Emergency Services. So the general manager did tour with OES staff to look at all of our damages last week. And they are, OES, as they are currently evaluating what we have as a claim, what is not claimable, and if there's enough dollar value in what has happened in the state as a whole to trigger a FEMA claim. So the difference would be if it stays at the state level and it stays with OES, anything that they deem as, you know, a project and they would approve us to go forward and repair and contribute to that repair would be 75% of the cost. And we would be responsible for 25% of the cost. If it would become a combination of FEMA and the state together for the recovery, it's a little more confusing. So it would be 75% of the cost by FEMA, and then the state would pay 75% of the remaining 25%. So it ends up being around 90% at the end of the day that we could potentially recover. At this point in the game, we don't believe insurance, we will meet the threshold of the deductible to even get assistance for insurance.
Ah, okay.
The insurance deductible is $500,000 because it's deemed a catastrophic flood. And that information just came down to us yesterday. So, you know, we would have to, we would only get recovery from insurance if our costs exceed $500,000. And based on our really rough numbers off the top of our head, we're not at that threshold. So it's, in my view at this point in time, I think it's highly unlikely that we would be recovering any insurance funding.
And I'm assuming any recovery would be beyond that 500,000 anyway.
Correct.
Yeah. So, okay. So right. Well, at least that gives a range on what we possibly will have to be looking at to cover within our general funds.
Correct.
Revenues. So for the community to keep in mind, the general fund is the fire department, it's the ranch, PROS, open space, anything, well, basically anything other than the enterprise units themselves.
Correct. Yeah, and the recovery, disaster recovery process is quite a lengthy process. In a recent conversation the general manager and I had with the county OES contact, the county's finally resolving projects and completing projects and receiving funding from storms that happened back in 2017. So, you know, it's not a fast process.
No.
So, you know, just to be aware, you know, we will have to expend the money up front and then we await reimbursement is usually how it works. So.
Okay. So we have potential challenges for the balance of the year and into next year for that matter, because I'm sure that the actual physical recovery items would probably extend over several months period.
Correct.
Okay. Appreciate that.
Sorry.
Well, I appreciate the information. Let's put it that way. All right. And so I'll ask, GMY Gold, is there anything additionally that you'd want to add in regards to that that data that we just got?
I've got a ton of information, and I'll address that next in my general manager report.
Excellent. Okay. Mm-hmm. So do the directors, any directors have questions regarding the budget report or the second quarter budget report?
Nope.
Okay.
I'd like to ask a question and make a comment.
All right.
Thank you. So I'm noticing, and just on page 145, under SWF Capital Improvement Programs, And I'm noticing under the 10-year cost where it says the...
Last page.
Yeah, page 145.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where it says under line 67, grand total, it appears to be $858,000 and change. This from Ms. Duffield, this would be applicable whether the facility operates or not?
You would have to consult the utility manager because these are projects that utilities has put in the budget and he could elaborate on those, or maybe the general manager could.
Okay. I also want to make an observation on page 129 under the current budget and the estimated actual cost for the SWF for this fiscal year. You know, it's roughly $980,000 to $996,000. So I just want to let folks know I took the time to count up the expenditures for the calendar year for the facility in 2020. And it came to roughly $971,000. That's the first time since we've been paying on this project since July of 2014 that the cost to the ratepayers of this community was actually less than $1 million. There was actually three times where it was actually under $10,000 a month for the first time. But I thought people might be interested in knowing, because I know people, as long as I've been on the board, still inquire as to the cost of the facility. So in adding up the cost from July 14th to the end of December of 2020, the cost to the ratepayers has been $18,200,243.58. I realize that not necessarily applicable to this mid-year budget overview, but I want to just put that information out there. So thank you.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? Yes, Vice President Howell.
This is unrelated. Can we take a very short break before the next item?
Oh, absolutely. So if there isn't any problem with moving forward, I guess the only other thing would be to take the motion on this agenda item 5D. So do I hear a motion?
What do we do? Do we accept the report?
Yes, we're accepting the second quarter budget report as presented by our finance manager, Ms. Duffield.
So move.
And seconded by
Director. I'll second it. Yeah, I also want to thank Ms. Duffield for getting us up to date on how to ultimately, you know, get some compensation for the storm damage for facilities and resources, and that it's a much more complicated situation than we might have anticipated. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. And so that's a second by Director Farmer. So Osana, may we have roll, please?
Sure. For 5D to accept the second quarter budget report by Finance Manager Pamela Duffield, Vice President Powell.
Aye.
Director Farmer.
Aye.
Director Gray.
Aye.
Director Dean.
Aye.
And President Steidel.
Aye.
Thank you. Five ayes.
Thank you. So agenda item 5D, the second quarter budget report from our finance manager, is passed with a vote of 5-0. Thank you, everyone. And let's see. I've got 3:49. Let's consider it 3:50 and be back at 3:55 if that's sufficient.
Right.
Excellent. Thank you.
Good.
Director Gray, are you available?
Not yet. Let me see. Oh, he's turned off.
There we go. Okay. Now, we lost Director Dean. Thank you. All right. So I will call us back to order, please. And we'll go ahead and proceed with item six, which are the manager reports. And so initially what I'd like to do is call for public comment on any of the manager's reports, please. Nosana?
No written comments, but I have a hand raised. Christine Heinrichs, go ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you. I don't see any update on the progress of the EWS CDP, either in the general manager's report or the utilities report. None of the required documents requested by the county has been filed since the original filing of July last year. Please include an update with your report on what is being done to complete this permit application. It's now coming up on 7 years since it was required. I recognize that Mr. D'Enzo is new to the district since this project started, but Mr. Gray was the district's public information officer at the time, and he should have adequate history of the project. Bob Greshens was kept on the district payroll as a retired annuitant in the event his knowledge was needed to testify in the CDM Smith lawsuit. He could be consulted. Please keep the board and the public informed as to the progress of this permit application. Friday morning tomorrow, the county planning department will meet to discuss the Hadean and Bookout permits, which were approved by the district. In an email to the county last week, Coastal Commission staff attorney Brian O'Neill wrote, "Our office has not changed our opinion that new connections in Cambria cannot be found consistent with the LCP and must be denied. During the last commission denial of a Cambria project, several commissioners expressed strong frustration that the county and the CCSD continue to approve projects when the commission's direction has been overwhelmingly clear. These two projects, if approved, are very likely to be appealed and denied. We would strongly encourage the county and the CCSD to focus on securing a new sustainable water supply for the community rather than continue to waste staff, time, and energy on individual projects that have very little chance of success. Thank you."
Thank you, Ms. Heinrichs.
Thank you. And the board calls Elizabeth Bettenhausen. Go ahead.
Thank you very much, Madam President. I would like, and the board secretary, in reverse order, actually, I would like to draw all your attention, please, to page 165 of your agenda. And I would like to request that you ask the utilities manager, I believe, who will be reporting on this, to tell us exactly how much PFAS were detected in the monitoring. I want to know, I know that this is not officially a state law. This is the 1 year of the beginning monitoring, and it will go into effect legally then in 2022, January. But I would like to know now, before we have to wait for all that, what exactly is the standard that is being used to make the judgment about PFAS? My second question is this. I want to thank Water Supervisor Mr. Green for answering a question I posed during the huge storm, now costing us something over $500,000 apparently on insurance, which is sort of sad. But I want to thank him for responding immediately to my question. I said, given the fact that we've got 10 to 15 inches of rain dumping on us in 3 days, are you doing any special checking of the wells, the water wells, to see if they are still giving us potable, safe water? And he said, yes. But I was derelict then because I did, and he copied in Mr. D'Enzo. I was derelict because, as a citizen, because I did not follow up and ask what the findings were about those from those special testings that were done about the quality of the water in the storm. So I would appreciate it very much if General Manager Weigold or Utilities Manager Supervisor, whoops, I get all these titles wrong, Mr. D'Enzo would report on that, please, and at your meeting now, forthwith and hastily. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Bettenhausen.
Thank you, Dr. Bettenhausen. So, Mr. Weigel, we'll proceed with your general manager's report, please.
Thank you, President Stridell. So I'm going to concentrate largely on the storm here. So as you all know, we had quite a deluge of varying water amounts, depending on what part of town you reside in. We started on Tuesday during my manager's meeting, the day and a half before the storm, to talk about preparations. And so it was a great follow on to President Stidell's president statement on the front end of the meeting today, because that's really what put in motion a lot of the preparation for the district for CCSD. Started at that meeting, I believe. It was a great cross discussion among departments, not only of what items we needed to accomplish, but how to work between ourselves to maximize our resources and manpower to accomplish all that we needed to do for preparation. We talked about not only internally, but external resources that we had at our disposal, such as civic groups that are available in the community, et cetera. And we saw that take place out on a ranch, for example, when some of the community pitched in and helped direct traffic across the ranch when the Windsor Bridge became flooded on one end. So the board received a lengthy report on all the department measures that the CCSD took on the front end. That paid big benefits once we got into the storm, but it didn't take away all the unplanned events that storms like that tend to throw at you. In fact, it was interesting after the storm that when I asked the County Emergency Operations Center who was working on the status of the emergency declaration, they responded and said, what declaration? It was just a rain event. And they had no idea how much damage we'd sustain up in the north end of the coast where we live. So it was a really good lesson for me that we need to not only continue to develop our relationships with the rest of the county, because when we call for help on those sort of things, the calls are returned briskly. And they were, in this case, an example of which was turning on the big pump in the West Village that the county maintains and operates. And that prevented a calamity in the West Village because of that pump that was installed after our 1995 storm. So, but the damage is pretty significant. We're tallying right now somewhere around $440,000 in cost. Some of that will be claimed. Some of that won't be available for potential reimbursement. And the reason I say that is we talked about the process a little bit, but not all events, not all damages are covered. So while we may be entitled to 75% reimbursement in some cases, that's only for damage that's covered. And so the various assessors take a look at what we're claiming to decide whether or not it's something that's within the realm of the possible. From their perspective, each department did sustain some damage, and I'm going to let each of the department heads talk a little bit about more detail on that. But one of the areas that departments that sustain the most damage is the facilities and resources area. That department alone is sustained 62% of the entire CCSD cost. And right now that's somewhere around $272,000. That's Carlos Mendoza's department, of course. And Carlos and his gang of three, including himself, really worked around the clock because there are several events that happened during the storm, including overflow of the Santa Rosa Creek. When that ran over the banks, that overflow went right through Carlos's building, right on down the trail, down to the Windsor, west side of the Windsor Bridge, across the roadway, so that we had to use a grader that was brought in by the county to actually plow Windsor Drive clear of mud and debris. And at one point, I actually saw a steelhead swim across the roadway. But he did. I'm happy to report he did make it. And he will live and swim on. It really was a team effort across many different organizations. California Highway Patrol was there to close the bridge when it was became an impassable roadway. The county, of course, the head of public works from SLO County called me, I think somewhere around 5 or 5:30 in the morning, to advise me of the operation startup of the pump down in the West Village. Various other fire departments, the county sheriff, and SLO County in general from the Emergency Operations Center, really keeping us posted on various activities that were ongoing from not only a county level, but a state level. As far as next steps go, so our first step was to make safe our community. And what I mean by that is we had to effect repairs on the fly for the purposes of health, safety, and security. So my guidance to the department heads was, if there's a health, safety, or security issue, remedy it immediately, make safe the conditions, document what you've got, and then we'll document the rest of the damage that's not emergent nature. And so we've done that to put together our list of damages. We reported that to the county. The county the following week on Thursday declared a local emergency. That enabled us to get them, the county, to get access to state funds, as the finance director outlined previously. So the following week, we learned that with a day's notice that the Cal OES, the California Office of Emergency Services, was sending out assessors to document our damages. They came out last Friday. I thought that was going to be an hour and a half event to quickly run through everything, and it turned out to be a 6-hour evolution as they went through each and every item on our schedule to document the costs, the pros and cons of repair of those issues, etc. They will now take that documentation back, combine that with other damage from around the state to determine if they meet the threshold for a national disaster that's declared by the president. We'll wait to hear the termination of that probably within the next week or two. And if that's the case, then we will go through this whole process all over again with new assessors from FEMA. Now, the good news is that FEMA and the state follow FEMA guidelines. So everything we've been doing is in line with how FEMA is going to consider are damages. The threshold for a local county declaration of emergency is just under $1 million. Now, the guideline for a federal emergency is about $56 million. But I'd emphasize that the $56 million is only a guideline. The president can decide that it might make sense for a much lesser amount in our case. But it all depends on how they determine that. And so, as the finance director mentioned, this is a really long process, and think months and years, not days and weeks. So we've got a long haul ahead of us. We're effecting repairs to those items that are critical in nature for our ongoing operations. We're making some trade-offs right now. For example, Carlos and his gang, he's going to outline what he's doing right now, but since his office was basically destroyed, he is working out of the vet's hall in a makeshift office there where we moved all the computer equipment and set up an office from him there. The downside of that is that he's at a distance away from all his equipment. So just to answer an email, they've got to go across town to get to their computers to affect any kind of communication, et cetera. The good news on the flip side of that, we're saving $10,000 a month on a portable construction trailer office that we would have used otherwise. And we don't know if those sort of things are going to be reimbursed or not at this point. So where we can, we're going to try to save some money for the district and only commit funds for those things that we really need to do. Again, starting with health, safety, and security, and pressing on from there. As you'll see from Carlos's report, this is a really powerful storm. The amount and volume of water and the size, you could just walk down the trail, which is closed to the public right now, but these trees that were upwards of a foot in diameter, uprooted from the soil and carried down the pathways over fences, over through buildings, was just amazing to see what's left. The county's got a big challenge on their hands to clear all that out now along the creek, and I'm sure that's going to take a good deal of time. That concludes my comments. Pending your general questions, again, I'm going to have the individual department heads report a little more detail on some of the things that they saw at their level.
Any comments or questions for GM Weigold, or do you want to move on to the other manager reports? Director Dean?
I just wanted to mention that at the NCAC meeting last night, Supervisor Gibson said that the Office of Emergency Services is asking for everyone to report all damage from the storm so they can build up the total amount that they're going to report. So that includes personal and business as well as right. The district. You might want to verify that, General Manager Weigold, to make sure that I quoted him accurately. But that is what he put across last night. Thank you.
Did he give any indication of who to contact in that regard? Or maybe you know that already, GM Weigold, I don't know.
He said to contact Blake Fixler.
Okay.
His assistant.
So I added a link in my report on the first paragraph on storm damage.
Yeah.
And I'd encourage individuals to go to the recoverslow.org site. That's the same site that we've got set up for COVID emergencies, but recoverslow.org link. And that's where businesses need to report or should report any current or future potential damage, and that includes economic damage as a result of the Rack Creek landslide area that's going to encumber them over the next period of time until Route Highway 1 is repaired. So I would encourage individuals to go to that same site. They'll likely have a have a place there for them to register as well. And again, all this, it's a great point, Director Dean, in that this all goes into capturing the cost to try to reach that $56 million threshold for a national disaster.
That's where he was going with that, yeah.
Right. Yeah, and I believe also that the Chamber of Commerce was notified of that information and that linkage also, so that they're another point of contact and distribution of information to the business community. Okay. Thank you. All right. GM Weigold, if we could proceed with the other managers and supervisors' reports, please.
Yes, I'll pass this over to Carlos to continue on with his department. I think he's got a slideshow set up for us.
Oh.
Good afternoon, board. Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you. So my report is basically the same as the general manager's, touching a lot about the storm. And as he mentioned, we took a big brunt of the storm. And I'll share some pictures on some of the impacts that we had there. Can you guys see that?
Yes.
Okay, great. So we knew that the storm was coming, and obviously we wanted to make preparations, as the general manager mentioned. One of the areas that we wanted to focus first on was behind the Veterans Hall. And as you can see, we sandbagged and transported a lot of sandbags and laid those across the back of the Veterans Hall. And down at the bottom picture, you see they actually worked. The Legion made us aware that there was very little damage back there, so that was nice to hear. But obviously, on our end, we wanted to make sure that our own facilities were prepped for the storm from previous events that we've had there before. And so from our end, we ended up days before putting all of our tools on higher ground on our shop, all of our power equipment, weed eaters, chainsaws. We ended up putting those on walls, up on the ceiling, all of our computers, all of our documents. We ended up putting those up on chairs and tables. And so little did we know that the preparation that we did was going to be so important for what was to come. And obviously, we showed up on that morning of the storm and realized that basically the creek had gone over and was flowing through our facility. You can see that it broke through the fence. It knocked down that fence. It flooded one of our trucks. At the lowest point, we had about 4 feet high water line at the facility. We had concrete asphalt that got taken up and moved. We had a lot of debris in our facility. Obviously, the creek came over, and it had debris from the creek, mud, branches, logs. They all sort of flowed in and stayed in our facility. So we obviously had a mess. And at that same point, obviously, it wasn't just our facility that got impacted by the storm. We had just about every other place that we serve had some impact. Obviously, you know, my staff, when we walked in, we were shocked. We had prepared for the worst, but we didn't realize it was going to get this bad. Mm. Luckily enough, like I said, our preparation worked out. We didn't lose any computers. We didn't lose any documents. We didn't lose any of our power equipment. We had very little loss in tools. We didn't lose any of our major pieces of equipment, such as tractors or chippers or anything along those lines. So we were very fortunate that our preparation worked out. But obviously, we had a lot of damage, including to our building, which you can see was just covered in mud, covered in water, our shops, our offices. And obviously, we as soon as we came in, we started doing some more preventative maintenance of moving out as much mud as we could, starting to clear out as much water as we could from the building so that no further damage would occur. We immediately called a company to come out and start the process of opening up the walls and putting up humidifiers and fans so that we could start drying up the place. Obviously, as we're doing that, we had a lot of issues in other places. And so we had flooding happen on the eastern part of the Fiscalina Ranch. We ended up closing the dog park for a few days since the parking lot was flooded. Basically, the entire east ranch was underwater as the creek came over. And so the entire trail system on that side was closed. And the small footbridge across the highway was washed away as well. We had actually spoken to, or I had spoken to Kitty Connolly, the Friends of the Fiscalina Ranch director, beforehand. And I had, expressed to her that if the storm got bad, we needed some assistance. And, this is where partnerships, this is where, good relationships come in play. Obviously we were just overwhelmed with the amount of stuff that came our way. And so as soon as the storm hit and we were actually trying to dig ourselves out of our facility, our volunteers basically deployed out for us on the Fiscalina Ranch. So we had volunteers out on every trail, scoping out damage, letting us know if there was any damage to trails, trees down, signs that were knocked out, and those were relayed over to us so that we could have a better understanding of what was going on out there. We suffered quite a bit of damage on the western part of the Fiscalina Ranch. So there were some huge wind gusts that came through the forest, and we ended up closing down all the forest trails across the Fiscalina Ranch. We estimated about 50 trees that came down during the storm. And so obviously some of these were hung up on trees, some were on trails. It created a huge safety issue for the public. And so one of the things that the Friends of the Fiscalina Ranch also did for us is they went out and labeled, laminated, made signs for us since we didn't have any signs available since they were basically buried in mud at our facility so that we could put these out on the trails and close the trail system. So that was a huge help for us. By about Thursday afternoon, we had closed the entire trail system off. I was fortunate enough that I was able to get a crew over the weekend. And on Monday, we had shown up with three crews to work through the trail system. As you can see, some of these trees had to be climbed, brought down in pieces, and the trails had to be cleared. It was a long day, and by the end of the day, we had dropped all 50 trees and reopened the entire trail system through the forest. One thing to note is that the Friends of the Fiscalina Ranch board, again, stepped up to the plate, and they actually paid for the three tree crews that came out and did the work on the Fiscalina Ranch. We also had issues on open space properties, and not only were we working on trees on the Fiscalina Ranch, but we were also getting calls from neighbors on open space properties. And so you can see one example here is this decayed tree that had issues at the trunk and was already leaning towards a house. And on the right hand picture, you see a yellow house. Actually that house years ago had a tree go through the house and basically demo the living room. And so the property owner obviously was very, very concerned about this tree. And that became a top priority for us to make sure that we had topped and dropped that tree as well. We also had flooding on the Sheffield Cornwall restroom. That was closed for a few days. You can see pictures of before and after. We were able to get that cleaned and reopened within 4 days of that happening as well. And as General Manager mentioned, we suffered quite a bit of damage on the trail behind the wastewater plant. It's called the Santa Rosa Creek Trail. We have about 1,200 feet of trail system there that got washed away. That is still closed. It is the only trail that's going to remain closed here for a little bit longer, as it's going to require quite a bit of work for us to be able to make those repairs. Again, we continue to have issues with encampments. This is another cleanup that we recently did at the Pocket Park. Again, we had the community action team from the sheriff department and a contractor help us to clean that pocket park and to store the items that were there. I also mentioned in my report a encampment that we found on the eastern part of the Fiscalini Ranch. This one, right on the creek, and it was fortunate that we were able to move the people there just a few days before the storm hit. And if you were out there when the storm hit, I mean, the creek came through and just was roaring through that area. So fortunately enough, we were able to get those people out of there in time. And just one last thing, you know, we've been doing a lot of work with the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch on replanting. In the last 3 or 4 months since November, we've replanted or planted about 500 pine trees. And then we had this great work party right next to the dog park where we planted a lot of native trees to provide some landscaping as well as some shade. That was a collaboration between myself and Kitty. We've been working on that for several months. No cost to the district. The Friends were able to receive a grant that paid for the trees and for the material to have those trees there. So that's my report. I'm happy to answer any questions if you have any.
Well, Carlos, I think we all recognize that there was a lot of activity going on and a lot of things that had to be addressed, but seeing them in pictorial fashion like that and understanding the magnitude of the things that you were working through, I think is sobering. And we probably will have very few ways where we can express ourselves sufficiently for the work that you and your crew did, as well as relationships that you have established with FFRP that helped to make some of this happen for us also. So personally, my thanks, and I'm sure the community feels the same way. So any comments or questions from any of the directors? Director Farmer. So Director Farmer, I'm sorry, your phone may be on mute.
Thank you, my apologies. I could hear you, so I didn't realize you couldn't hear me. I just wanted to make a comment to Carlos. One of the photos that he showed, for those of us that have been down to his facility, we know that the creek is close by, but there's been a sufficient amount of vegetation on the outside of the fence there before you get to the creek. And it appears that all of that vegetation was washed away, which really shows the magnitude and the force of the creek just coming down in the amount that it did, which is, having been involved in the flood in my life, the power of water is like remarkable in what it can do, what the damage that it can do in a relatively short period of time. So my hat's off to you and your crew, Carlin.
Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer.
Here, here.
Yes.
All the way around.
Yeah, very good job. Thank you.
So, Carlos, do you have anything else for us now, or should we be asking GMY Gold to move us on to the next report?
Yeah, that was my report. I have nothing else to add. I'll pass on my your thank yous to my staff.
Oh, please.
You know, just so you know, we're in good spirit. We're here at the Vetzel, and we're doing well.
Well, hearing that, I'm pleased for you and your staff that that's the case, and again, our gratitude. GM Wetgold.
Yeah, that concludes my part of the report. And Carlos, I should mention also that Carlos is sitting on a brand new floor that's been refinished over at the Vetzel courtesy of Slo County. And it looks like a buffed
Right.
A brand new basketball court in there. So when the board returns finally to in-person meetings, we're going to have a fantastic, beautiful looking floor in there.
Right.
Yeah, that was to buff out all of the the floor positionings that they had from the election cycle. Was that
It was actually sanded down and refinished.
Wowzer. Right. Okay. Director Gray.
Yeah, maybe I should make sure that everybody notes the cleanup week coming up. We missed it last year because of COVID, and it's March 8th and March 12th for your extra trash. It'd be good to let the public
right
know.
Right in front of me.
There it is, yes.
I know I need it.
At last, after two years, you know. So it's a good thing. I'm glad we're doing it.
Yes, I agree. Mission
Country's doing it, yeah.
I want to make note also, and thanks for pointing that out, Director Gray. They mentioned on that announcement not to put what you want disposed of, not to put it out until the morning of the trash pickup. I know some of us will put it out the night before, the day before, whatever, and they prefer we don't do that. I think that's mainly because sometimes debris gets knocked over or torn up by raccoons and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then it makes it more difficult for them to pick up that next day. So I just wanted to make a point.
Makes sense. Right. Thank you, Director Farmer. All right. GM Weigold, the finance manager report. Okay. Ms. Duffield.
Unmute.
Am I unmuted? I think I am.
Yes.
Okay, you can hear me. Perfect. So thank you, President Steidel. So this is a report for the month of January. It seems like I just gave a report, but that was actually last meeting. That was the month of December. So this is actually for the month of January's activity. So we talked already on page 164. I made a couple of notations. We talked already about, the damage from the storms. And then the last meeting, we talked a little bit about the FEMA recovery for COVID. So how we're proceeding with the FEMA recovery from COVID is essentially how we're going to be proceeding with any recovery from the storm damage. I just want to reiterate again, it's a different process than when we apply for a grant. When we apply for a grant, it's before we incur any funds. This happens kind of in the reverse. So there might be things that we have to do up front that we have to recover later. So I just wanted to reiterate that again. I know it's a confusing process for a lot of people to understand, but hopefully at the last meeting, I explained the process. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask. As far as the Tyler Financial System, during the month of January, we spent a lot of time configuring the financial models. Those are the financial modules. Those are payroll, the general ledger, accounts payable, and we started in purchasing just a little bit, but didn't get so far with purchasing. So the purchasing fixed assets and work orders are scheduled to be rolled out live more into the new fiscal year once we get all the other financial modules, and then we follow with utility billing, which will all happen before the end of the fiscal year. So we have to strategize that a little bit so we make sure that, everything's successful and we move forward with the plan to implement. As far as the audit goes, we have the final report is going through its final review with the auditors, Moss, Levy, and Hartheim. That will take approximately 2 to 3 weeks, and then we should have a report in hand. So as soon as I do get that report in hand, I will get with Director Gray, and we will get a special finance committee meeting together. And then we will follow that with
the soonest board meeting that we can get it on in March. So I don't know if that will make the timing for the first board meeting. If it doesn't make the timing of the March 11th meeting, we will get it on the meeting for the 18th. So I anticipate that will be moving forward. And then we will be at the end of March moving into our 19-20 fiscal year audit. So busy. I'm going to get out of the audit cycle one of these years. It is going to happen.
It's going forward, yes.
Well, and that'll bring us by doing that and proceeding into the 19-20, that'll bring us up to date also. So that's
correct. Yeah, we'll catch up fine. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that is all I have on my report for the month of January. I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions? Director Gray?
Yeah. Not quite a question, but maybe a request at a future report you do. I think we need to have at some point kind of revisit the cost of the SWF and maybe report on it in a way that has a breakdown so that there's some of the misunderstandings about the actual full cost can be cleared up. I heard high numbers. I heard one today that are the result of, say, double counting loan proceeds and payment of the principal and things like that. So I think at some point, whatever it seems appropriate for you, maybe an update on the project costs, how they were funded, what's left in the reserves from the loan proceeds and the grant proceeds, how much has been spent on principal repayment, interest, and so forth. So people can see exactly what the elements of the cost are, I think.
So maybe that is a good suggestion when we move forward to talk about how the settlement proceeds should be used and the conditions. Maybe that would be a great time to just kind of revisit what's happened to date and where we are.
Yeah, that'd be very good. Thank you.
That'd be my suggestion.
That is an excellent suggestion. It correlates the two, and we will not just arbitrarily be using money in any way. That's contained by any number of requirements that are in place for the way that things are handled in funds.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the suggestion, Director Gray. I appreciate that. So, Jim Weigold, do we move to the utilities report then?
Yes, please.
Mr. D'Anzo. Hello.
Hello. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you, President Steidel. And yeah, I'm pleased to give the utilities report for activities that took place in January of this year. I'm going to go ahead and talk about the storm event right up front, because there's a lot of things I wanted to say about it. In general, I wanted to state, and a lot of you already know this, that the staff performed excellently. I said before, and you guys have already known this, that we have the A team here at our district. I came in at the right time to take the reins of this. So just in general, there was prior to the storm, there was a lot of training that our operators had and a lot of preparation that our operators did. Things like basic things like clearing debris, fueling all of the generators, fueling all the trucks ready to go, getting our communications in place, getting all our rain gear up in order. So all of that, you know, and some of our facilities had some sandbags put up just in case any flooding would happen, which did, and it was able to be protected. So all of that took place, and you know, we all heard the forecasts. You know, you just never know for sure what's going to happen. So anyway, all these preparations were made, and then the storm happened. So rain, a lot of rain, a lot of wind, a lot of power fluctuations, access issues because of flooding, trees falling down because of the storm and wind. So all of that, you know, like the you know, puts all of these plans in disarray. But not these guys. These guys had adapted quickly, maintained their cool. A lot of, and you know, they fought through the exhaustion. They fought through their, you know, getting soaked through. So, and a lot of quick thinking because there was there were problems happening all over the place at the same time. So, some quick thinking was involved with, you know, trying to figure out the right places to go at the right time. So that being said, there were a lot of issues that took place because of the storm. You know, fun facts that I stated in my report: this was a 200-year storm event. It was actually a 200-year storm event for a 24-hour period, and it was a 200-year storm in a 48-hour period. The analysis is not complete yet regarding the intensities, but I'm sure, you know, we don't need to know that was pretty big too. So, and couple that with the high winds and the power fluctuations caused a lot of issues throughout the district. Because of the nature of the state of our collection system, we had a lot of water coming into the plant. Our plant received six times what we normally receive. So just to give you a context on this, 1900 gallons per minute were coming into the plant, and then the amount of gallons per minute pumping out to the effluent ponds were 1300 gallons per minute. So, yeah. So there was a lot of action that took place where the guys here at the plant, you know, we have current diversions in place, but we had to add other diversions to account for those extra flows. One of which is going to be we pumped a lot of the water into the one of the tanks that we're going to repurpose as an equalization basin as part of the PG&E project. So again, you know, they were able to do that, and you know, that's one of the things that we're hoping to a project that we hope to get done. So there was that. We had lift station issues of the power fluctuations. There were issues with specifically in lift station B3, where because of the power fluctuations, the power didn't kick on. You know, there was an issue with the transfer switch. So because of that, some sewage spilled into the from the lift station there. It was estimated to be around 8,000 gallons. So it's not significant, but it could have been worse. The guys caught it in time. There was also a fence damage in lift station B, which is just down the creek from downstream, I should say, from Carlos's shop. The flooding that overtook his shop also overtook the lift station B's fence. So that was destroyed, and also it hindered our access for a little bit. There was it got tenuous there for the time being. There was also the lift station by the hardware store that got flooded and suffered some damage because of it. And that's one of those lift stations that we want to repair as well. And hopefully, you know, converting it to a gravity system, we'll be able to not need the issues of generators. So hopefully these are one of the things that we're hoping to fix. As far as on the water side, so a lot of the damage that the water department experienced were electrical in nature. So there weren't a lot of structural damage, although there was like one of the chlorine buildings got you know, it was just a little shed got destroyed out in San Simeon Wellfield, but the guys were able to put that up quickly. One of the access roads leading up to the SWF site was damaged due to storm runoff. And then some SCADA antennas on Pine Knolls and on Stewart Street were also they were destroyed, but it got due to the power fluctuations, it became broken, and so that was one of those things that we couldn't wait for any kind of emergency fund to kick in. We needed to fix it right away because it required water delivery. So because of all of this, during the storm, there was a lot of communication issues that our water guys needed to actually run the pump manually, if you will, meaning that they didn't rely on SCADA systems to power these pumps. They had to turn them on by hand, you know, to be sure that they function properly. So those are some of the things that they had to respond to in order to get through the storm and keep everyone's service up and running. And because of that, the service kept on running, and they made the decision right away to not have the generator go back, you know, because of the power fluctuations. There can be issues when you go from generator power to line power, and they didn't want to risk any more power fluctuate, you know, that transfer to damage some of our systems. So they made the decision at the time to just run everything manually. And that was, again, an example of quick thinking on all their parts. So that in a nutshell was what happened. We, you know, there was some damage, but luckily there weren't a lot of structural damage. Just a lot of what we call, when we went with OCS, OES, that, you know, was invisible damage, because a lot of our electric devices got fried due to the power fluctuations. So with that, I'll go through my regular report to answer Dr. Bettenhausen's question about the extra tests that we did for due to the high groundwater. We did get the results back, and the results are both negative for both coliform and E. coli. So good news on that front. And as far as the PFAS levels, there are 31 PFAS indicators that we tested for. And one of them, went above the action level. We haven't posted them to the state website yet, but once we post that to the state website, we will make that data available on our website as well. But I also wanted to let everyone know that there wasn't any PFAS in our production wells. So, that's good news for that, but we found it in our waste stream. And the other thing too, is I also want to make note that I don't want to be an alarmist on this, because we're supposed to be doing this monitoring for the entire year, and there hasn't been any course of treatment recommendations yet. You know, that's going to come after we do the year of tests. So it's not something that, you know, I want to make a sound an alarm, but at the same time, I want to let everyone know that this might be a potential thing that we need to treat in the future. As far as our water is concerned, there were a couple of leaks again that happened. I think I'm going to start making some changes as far as how I report these, because it's a common thing that happens. I might just put it in a little table in the future, but leaks did happen. As far as in the month of January, we used 4% of our diversion from Santa Rosa and San Simeon. Our well levels are now trending at, you know, above average because of the storm. And again, this is a really good example of how our groundwater basin behaves, where you could have you can be in danger of a drought condition in 1 month, and at the next month it could be, you know, back to normal, or even in this case above normal. And as far as our SWF, there were minor operations that were done, things like running some potable water through the filter just to, you know, keep it maintained, and also exercising some valves. And as far as our conservation and permits go, we did get some, we got a grant to do 100 more of the flume devices. So that's coming around the pike here. As far as the urban water management plan, there was, you know, we're moving through, getting through the demand models going, and then the supply models are also being done as we speak. And I do plan to give a more detailed report on Monday at the RNI meeting relating to our CDP, our progress, and also our UWMP progress. But just to let you know that, you know, we do hope to, we are starting to do some work on the task two version of the in-stream flow study, but we do plan to present an RFP in the near future regarding the larger in-stream flow study. So those are the efforts there. And, you know, I also wanted to make mention in our tech talks, one of the reasons, you know, it's a good way to remind people that we have a giant petri dish in our plant, you know, where there's a lot of microorganisms that we need to maintain balance. And incidents like this upsets that balance. And that's why, you know, typically you will start having odor issues and things like that until the organisms get balanced again. And this time, luckily it wasn't as bad, even though we did get a lot of flow, but it did upset the balance. And then we did get some odor issues in the plant, but again, like, it could have been worse. So
Ray, I apologize for interrupting you, but we're getting kind of close to the 5 o'clock hour. And we'll probably need to extend the meeting for a bit, at least, to finish up, because you may have questions coming to you from the directors, and I'll want to be asking the directors about any of the reports from their committees. So, board, if I may, could I take a motion, please, for extension of the meeting, Director Dean?
I move we extend the meeting to 5:30.
Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Director Farmer? Okay, fine. Why don't we do it by show of hands? We should be able to do this to extend the meeting. All right, I see everyone in favor of doing that. So 5-0 to extend the meeting to 5:30. Thank you very much. And Mr. Danzo, I apologize for the interruption, because it's interesting information and it's appreciated.
That concludes my report. There were a couple of questions that came up. I just wanted to answer them just really quickly. Regarding the pond, our current impoundment basin there at the SWF site, questions have been coming up about, you know, should we be pumping that water? And the answer is yes, we need to pump that water out of there, because we don't have a permit to have a stormwater storage. We do have a land use discharge permit, and this particular pumping of this pond falls under what's called inert waste in our land use discharge permit. And we pump it to the percolation basin, which is now a sand bottom basin, right just south of the existing impoundment where the old perk pond used to be. So mm-hmm. That's where we pump it. And we have to pump it there at the rate of percolation. So, I mean, even if we were able to pump million gallons a minute. It's not gonna, that's not how we're supposed to do it. We're supposed to pump it just consistent with the percolation of that basin. And the way it is now, we're, you know, we're doing that. So it takes a while. I believe that it was going to be done, if not almost done, as we speak. But so that's the issue there. And then the other question came up about the SCADA costs in the expenditures report. Those SCADA costs are for upgrades to our water system upgrades. We are finally jumping into the 20th century with that. We're upgrading our hardware, and we're also upgrading the software for the SCADA system for the water. And that SCADA is, hopefully it's going to be scalable for anything that we ever do for the district in the future. So that's those are the questions that I know people had that I thought to address. But okay. Yeah, now I'm completely done. If you have any other questions, I'm more than happy to answer them.
Do any of the directors have questions for Mr. D'Anzo?
No.
Vice President Howell.
Thank you. Just a couple. I'm just kind of wondering, and this may not even be a fair question, so you can not answer it if you choose. But do you have any sense as to any kind of ballpark as to what the additional testing for the treatment options? I mean, do you have any idea at all as to how much of a hit we're going to take if we have to treat our water for PFAS? I mean, are we talking tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands? Or I mean, what is the?
So my estimate there, Vice President Howell, is it's probably going to be $100,000 a year, because it's going to require that the accepted treatment is a carbon filter for that. So yeah, so it's going to be about that much.
Okay, thank you. In other words, non-trivial. It's a non-trivial expense, yeah. But it isn't completely out of the world. And it's not like millions or something. It's, like, we don't have to build a new sewer treatment plant.
No.
Okay. The other one was, we did have an SSO. Are we going to be fined for that?
Yes, we will be fined for that.
You have any idea about the amount on that?
We're probably not going to find out for a couple of years, honestly. But it's probably going to be on the order of $10,000, something like that.
Thank you. Again, not a horrible number, but yeah. I know that the state looks they do frown on SSOs. So
yeah.
And the other thing, while I've got the floor, again, thanks to you and all of the team. I think one of the things that people may not realize, we were all here really comfortable over here in Marine Terrace, didn't see any of that going on. I think it's a measure of your success, the fact that so many of us were not aware of what you all were doing. You were able to keep us warm and with drinking water and with our toilets flushing. Mm-hmm. It was wonderful. And the fact that we could do that without even thinking about you guys tells me that you're doing a fantastic job. So thank you very much.
Director Gray, did you have a question?
I had just a couple questions. Yeah, it was kind of related to what Vice President Howell was saying, actually. One was on the PFAS. If we have to do carbon filtration, are there any other benefits of carbon filtration? In other words, is this something we're going to get something out of other than just meeting the requirement to treat PFAS?
Are you asking, like, is there like a cross benefit to?
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
If we were to do this, I can't believe I'm saying this. No, because there is a possibility. There is a possibility, like if we upgrade the treatment, which would start getting expensive. That would be something that, if we wanted to get serious, for example, in doing recycled water, you know, that would be a cross benefit. into all of this. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. I'm not gonna cross that bridge now, even though I tiptoed across.
No. And this is treatment of the waste. This is treatment of waste water, yeah. Right? So people are clear on that. And on the I had kind of the same question, related question about the SSO and the fine. I kind of am going to ask you, we're going to get fined for it. But also, is there any chance that that fine could be included in the damages we're trying to rack up to get help?
Yeah.
Or fine's totally not.
Ms. Duffield's anything, going.
Anything fancy. You can't do anything fancy like that, right?
No, unfortunately.
Too bad. Okay.
Thank you, Director Gray. Any other questions from the directors? Well, Mr. D'Anzo, I think that probably Vice President Howell framed worked the dialogue beautifully in terms of what the staff accomplished and how they managed to keep us happily ignorant of what was happening around us during the storm in that regard. And please, I will take the opportunity myself, but also please extend our appreciation of all of the board members to Mr. Green and to Mr. Alchin and their staffs for the exemplary work that they did in keeping the district safe and taking care of us in the way that they did. You're right, they are the A-team. So thank you.
Oh, here he
is. Director Farmer?
Yeah, I had my hand up earlier. I know you didn't notice, but I just wanted to make a comment. First off, I did talk to John Alchin, and he told me the extraordinary work that he and his crew did, including, working 24 hours straight, leaving at like 11 at night and coming back at like 3 in the morning, that type of thing. So hats off to them from saving from a serious disaster at the sewer plant. But I also wanted to make mention of the fact, I'll try to keep this brief, that up until we had this deluge, which obviously did a lot of serious damage throughout the community, especially to Carlos's facility. But prior to that, we'd had less than 2.5 inches of rain. And I was talking to General Manager Weigold, and he said that that Mr. D'Anzo had approached him about the possibility of maybe in the near future having to pursue a stage 2 water emergency. So we've kind of obviously avoided that situation. But I feel that maybe the district, since it doesn't appear any rain is on the horizon for the remainder of this month, we may get fortunate and have some rain in March and April like we did last year. But the way things were going, I think somehow, and maybe I should bring this up at another time considering we're running short of time, but we should be, again, encouraging residents, as to best water use practices, reuse of water, water capture, and so forth, because we're very fortunate right now that the well level went up 13 feet as a result of the rain that we got. But that shouldn't mean that we still shouldn't be approaching this from, a very water conscious state of mind. So I just wanted to point that out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Director Dean.
I too want to express my appreciation to Mr. D'Anzo and his whole crew for the excellent job they did keeping us safe. But I would also like to say that I was not oblivious to what they had to have been going through. I was thinking of them quite often through this storm and worried about what they had to go through. And I do appreciate everything that they did to keep us safe and keep the community safe. And thank you again.
You're absolutely right, Director Green. Yeah. I was a little flippant in that statement, and I apologize because you'd be hard pressed not to be aware of what the folks were going through with the wind and the rain, frankly. So thank you. All right. If I don't see anything additionally, Mr. D'Anzo, thank you for an excellent report and for very specific information. And answering the questions that the community had posed to you also. So thank you. And now you can go back to your job, I guess.
I wonder what happened to that.
So just out of curiosity, Ms. Jim Weigold. And we could certainly discuss this at some time, but I'm assuming there's some kind of mechanism in place for not having to have the staff wait around through the entire meeting just to get to their report functions, that they can kind of be statused into when they might need to be responding or giving their reports.
President Stidell, that's absolutely true. And you'll see different staff members going live and then hiding video, which is basically them continuing to work.
Okay. Well, I didn't want to impose that on them. And if it was happening that way, that we'd find some other way to deal with it, because they obviously have a lot more to do than to listen to us for a day afternoon. So what I'd like to do then, unless there is some other action, is to, I managed to turn over my agenda. So coming up with the appropriate reference on the next agenda item for the reports from the board members, committee and liaison report 7.0. Okay, and I'll call for public comment, or is there any public comment or questions that the public may have in this regard? I don't see any. Were there any that were submitted either by email or by letter, Osana?
Where she is.
I'm here. Neither one.
Okay, thank you very much.
No written and nobody's hand is up.
All right, thank you. We'll go ahead and move to the committee reports then. So first, the Finance Committee. Director Gray.
The only item really major item that we took care of at this past meeting was the budget update, quarterly budget update, which is on the agenda. Okay. So I think as far as the report goes, I think that's about all there is.
Okay, thank you. Policy Committee report. President Howell.
Thank you. I don't have a lot to say. I don't really remember whether I gave the report at the last meeting or not.
No, we moved through them quickly because of where we were in our timing. Mm-hmm. So,
very little has developed. So I think what I'd like to do is actually basically not give a report this time, except very briefly. But the report that I keep trying to give, which we keep not having time for, I may update it and bring it back again.
Okay. And that's something that we can discuss as part of the agenda review also, if that is satisfactory for you. Okay.
We will do a future agenda item in terms of, I would like to have a board discussion and direction about what are the hot issues for the board that the policy committee can really help with.
Okay. I mean,
the whole universe of stuff out there, so we do need to focus on where we can best do our efforts to provide the best service to the district.
Okay.
So that's the only other thing I want to say. We will have the meeting, which our meeting will be next week. This is in case anyone's still listening. Next week at 2:30 on Thursday. At that time, we will be doing sort of a kickoff and kind of reviewing our work and trying to establish a way forward. I've also asked Amanda Rice to come and present to the committee her ideas as to, because the big policy committee was originally formed at her behest. And so I'd like the current committee to at least hear what her ideas were. And she's had, 8 years experience on the board and has certainly dealt a lot with policy. So I thought it'd be a good way to start the year.
Okay.
Kind of move forward. But I do invite all of you to please come and listen if you like. It should actually be, as particularly Amanda's presentation might be interesting. She hasn't told me, I've told her she could have as much time as she wanted. And so what I'm hoping is there will be a presentation, and then the committee can discuss a little bit about how they feel about what makes good policy and how they'd like to proceed. We'll kind of just to kind of get a shot at it. So there won't probably be a lot of substantive work, although I have put some things on the agenda in the event that we have time. I don't like to.
Okay.
Just, but my actual intention is to have this more as a kickoff. But we'll see what happens. But thank you.
All right.
I'll have a lot more next time.
Okay. Thank you. And we'll move on then to the Resources and Infrastructure Committee report. Director Dean?
Well, in January, we met and discussed the contract with Gus Yates and Todd Groundwater and the piezometers and forwarded that on to finance. We have not had our meeting yet this month. It is going to be Monday at 2 o'clock. We postponed it so that we could have the new committee members present.
Oh, excellent.
Okay. I do have an NCAC liaison report since I haven't been able to report on it for the last 2 months.
Okay, excellent. Why don't we go ahead and have that then?
Okay. So we've had two NCAC meetings since my last liaison report. In January, there were two special speakers. Sarah Grable of Slo County Public Works spoke about the flooding that had occurred in the West Village in 1995 and the three projects that had been done to help prevent flooding in the future. The installation of the Main Street Pump Station, the Santa Rosa Creek Bypass, and the Sheffield Street storm drain. She commented that some localized flooding could still occur and that there were 22 parcels in the West Village that were still in flood-prone locations and that should consider getting flood insurance if they did not already have it. This is kind of a,
yeah. Hindsight, right?
A flood wall is being considered in the future between the Santa Rosa Creek and Highway 1 to prevent water from flowing over the highway. This wall is proposed to be 2 feet higher than the highway. Her PowerPoint presentation on this is available on the NCAC website at this point. Also in January, Celeste Goyer from Smart Share Housing Solutions talked about their program of matching up people to share homes, which could help seniors living alone and also provide an affordable place to live for those who may be facing homelessness. More can be learned about this program by going to homeshareslo.org. At last night's NCAC meeting, John Olenek, I hope I said his name right this time, a senior transportation planner for Caltrans, gave a presentation on the Big Sur Highway 1 Sustainable Transportation Demand Management Project. As you may remember, he gave a presentation here at the Vets Hall a couple of years ago on this concept. Last night's presentation was an update on that. This project is working on ways to limit the impact of tourism traffic between Carmel and our area along the Highway 1 scenic route. His presentation is also on the NCAC website. Next month's special guest will be Kevin Draminski, a public information officer for Caltrans District 5, and he will be giving an update on the Rat Creek closure and the solutions being undertaken to prepare the washout and reopen the road. And this will be March 17th at 6:30 on Zoom. I attended both the January and February Coastal Commission meetings via Zoom. There were no items really specific to Cambria. However, there were quite a few interesting pending legislative bills discussed that could affect our part of the coast. Among them, there was a bill that could allow cities and counties to ministerially approve applications to allow two residential units on a single family parcel, as well as splitting larger lots into two parcels for residents, providing each parcel is of equal size and greater than 1,200 square feet. These actions would not be subject to CEQA and could not supersede the intent of the Coastal Act. Also discussed was a bill regarding ADUs that would allow an ADU to be sold separately if it was built by a qualified nonprofit. There were also several bills that are pending that were discussed that could also affect our part of the coast, including several on climate change and sea level rise. All of these legislations that are pending are described on in the staff report, the legislative staff report on those two Coastal Commission meetings. So there's a lot of legislative pending to keep an eye on that could possibly.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That's my report.
All right. I guess what I'll do first is ask for ad hoc committee reports. I hadn't gotten any notification of any of the ad hoc committee wanting to provide a report, but I just wanted to put that out there. Director Dean?
Okay, Director Farmer and I have been gathering data on the existing commitment lists and the intent to serves, and with another little discussion between us, we will be ready to have a Zoom meeting with District Council, the General Manager, and our Mr. D'Anzo and Melissa Bland. And then after we do that, we should be able to make a report. But Director Farmer and I need to get together and discuss the data a little bit further first before we schedule the Zoom meeting. But we're working on it.
Excellent.
I don't know if Director Farmer has anything to add to that.
No, I don't. Thank you for updating the folks on that. Thank you.
Okay. Any other ad hoc? All right. Any liaison reports other than obviously the NCAC, which we've already had a chance to obtain in Coastal?
Well, I've got some reports here. I'll make them as brief as possible. I just want to follow up. And these are obviously two-month reports for 2 months of meetings. With regard to FFRP, I already elaborated on what they've been doing last week with regard to them assisting us financially, assisting the district financially with regard to the maintenance of the Fiscalini Ranch. You know, they increased the amount of monies that they're giving us every year. And as Carlos alluded to, they paid for the entire cost of cutting down and removing the trees during the recent storm. So hats off to them. Also want to mention that John Nixon, former member of the policy committee, is now the new board chairman of FFRP. With regard to the forest committee, a number of items were discussed. I'm just going to highlight one, and that is the ongoing concern of the fact that trees are being cut down throughout the community, including as houses are being built, even though there's a moratorium. Folks are often planting different trees than were removed, or no trees are being replanted at all. It appears that there's a possibility that there used to be a requirement from the county for a permit to cut down a tree, and maybe that tree removal ordinance is no longer in effect. And I could elaborate on that a little bit more, but I'll just say right now, we're still concerned about hiring a forest management consultant and an ecologist, and we'll be following up on that. I guess I could also mention very briefly that Green Space co-founder Rick Hawley is stepping down from his duties as their Green Space forest manager. They're gonna need someone to replace him. And also Green Space is needing a new board, has replaced their board president, which is Mary Webb, with John C. With regard to the healthcare district, and they talked about a number of issues. I'll highlight briefly some of them. With regard to a COVID vaccine, 40% of the local EMTs have chosen to get the vaccine. 60% have decided not to. But this essentially reflects the national average among emergency folks. The majority of them still don't want to take the vaccine. Also, CCHD is soon going to be doing a survey on patient satisfaction as to the quality of service that is provided, and they have yet to develop the questionnaire for doing so. Also, there was a discussion of the use of social media, such as Facebook, that the EMTs are currently providing, giving feedback to the community regarding the health care that they provide, and they're posting photos at the Cambria Paramedics Facebook website. There was a bit of discussion and contention on this, but ultimately the board approved this 3-2. And then finally, CCHD is soliciting proposals for another primary care facility here in Cambria. You might recall that for a brief time, there was a medical office that opened over there next to the Chevron station that only lasted for a few months, and then it disappeared. So they're going to once again see forming an ad hoc committee, solicit for another primary care facility. Excuse me for not being as focused as I should be. So it appears that the biggest challenge right now is due to the high Medicare load in Cambria, which usually means a low profit margin. Many agencies are reluctant to make a commitment to set up a facility here in Cambria. So they're initiating this as we speak, but it appears that the results are likely not to be known until the end of 2022 as to whether we actually will have the opportunity to have another healthcare facility in addition to community health services. So those are my reports. Thank you.
Thank you, Director Farmer. And I believe that would be the completion of the liaison reports, unless someone has something else. So we'll move on to future agenda items. I know that there are a couple of items that Vice President Howell and I'm working on that we'll be reviewing as part of our agenda review coming up. But is there something additionally that we need to consider, Director Dean?
Hey, I don't want to sound like a broken record here. But if I can refer you to page 35 of the agenda packet under regular business 5A, we'd had a motion and a second and a unanimous vote to bring back the discussion of the name of the SWF onto the March 11th meeting. And so that's my future agenda item.
Okay, thank you.
I second that.
Thank you, Director Farmer. Anything else? Vice President Howell.
The matter that Cynthia Repogle brought up regarding the ordinance to allow styrofoam and stuff. I note she's asking for a letter of support from us if we're willing, but I think we'd have to have a meeting in order to do that. And I think the meeting at which this is going to be discussed, according to her, was, as I recall, if I got it right,
March 10th.
March 10th, and our meeting is March 11th. So I guess I just wanted to put this out. If this is something that we wish to weigh in on, I fear that we will need a special meeting. Is that perhaps not the case, Mr. Carmel?
That is the case.
That is the case. So I just put that out there for folks. Because if we do that, I suppose we don't have to decide here right now, but I don't know. I don't know what to do about this.
Well, right. The other thing is that GM Weigold was able to get some additional feedback regarding this. And this is more than just what was represented on the surface by what was brought to us. And it's actually being considered at a much higher level. In terms of why, and much of it has to do with the impact of COVID also. So, I mean, we could certainly do that, but having a special meeting, and she actually was approaching us as an individual. She wasn't representing the board.
Right, right.
Even though she represented herself as a board member.
Yeah, I understand. But we are concerned if this is something that our board wants to chime in on. I guess that was the only question I had. I mean, we can always do as individuals ourselves if we need. So I just don't know. It's just that it was brought before us, but we really have no time to act. So that was my concern.
Right. Director Farmer?
Yeah, I just want to add the fact that due to COVID-19 and the fact that the restaurants are not able to use regular dishes and cups and glassware, and they're using, styrofoam and other products. There's far more styrofoam going in the trash here in Cambria than there ever has been along Main Street. I mean, I see that, And it's of a major concern, and it's an unfortunate situation. Am I saying, therefore, that we should send a letter of support? I'd love to do that, but I just want to say that this is a problem that's being generated just in our community, and I'm sure it's going on all over the country. So I just want to mention that.
That's a true statement. The other side of that coin, of course, is that the businesses are already reeling from lack of revenue and having to make expenditures for being able to maintain themselves by investment in outdoor dining and everything else. And although it may sound like an odd reason for it, I think the idea of their being able to use whatever they may have at hand and the reality is there's a lot more to it in terms of structure and why there are legislative things that are being considered to be set aside for the mm-hmm. time period because of COVID and the impact that yeah. implementing it at this point would be. So again, it was an individual, but if this board would want to have a special meeting sometime before March 10th, or perhaps Mr. Weigold, you could provide information each out to the directors on some of the feedback that you had gotten to status that and do that by email. And that way they would be aware of it. And then potentially we could again respond out by email asking for individual feedback about the idea yeah. of a special meeting in that regard. Is that, Vice President Howell, does that sound like a...
I think, yeah, let me restate it, see if I got you, if I understood. So, yeah, so if we each have the information, so if General Manager Weigold gets us the information, then it seems like it might be appropriate, and this is, I'm not sure if you were headed here, to in some way poll us to decide whether we wish to have a special meeting. Is that kind of what you had in mind?
Yes.
Okay, that works for me just yeah. fine. I just thought maybe we ought to do something. Yeah.
Okay. Director Gray?
Well, we also always have the option of addressing this as individuals.
Oh, yeah,
right.
As we got the information, it seemed to be a lot less complicated. Exactly. It could be done more quickly. Yeah. So.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. We've got 2 minutes left, or I have to extend the meeting.
Sorry.
So, do you want to extend the meeting?
I just want to quickly add, I wasn't finding fault with any of the local businesses, restaurants, or otherwise. They're stuck between a rock and a hard place. I wasn't criticizing them. I want that to be understood. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Director Farmer.
Okay.
Any other actions by board members, or
no,
can we move toward
no.
adjournment at yes. five for the meet the 5:30 hour?
Yep.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for your time and for the extension
of
today so that we could accomplish our work. And it's much appreciated. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
This meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.